Did you know Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the U.S. with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the U.S.? They have everything you could possibly want, like fruit trees, palm trees, evergreens, houseplants, and so much more. Whatever you're interested in, they have it for you. Find the perfect fit for your climate and space. Fast Growing Trees makes it easy to order online, and your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. And along with their 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee, they offer free plant consultation forever. This spring, they have the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code POOL at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code POOL at checkout. Fastgrowingtrees.com, code POOL. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply.
Oh, man, we got a lag here.
Yeah.
Jussie Smollett is guilty. Guilty on 5 of 6 counts, and I'm really confused as to how they didn't find him guilty on the 6th count, but they didn't. Either way, I guess each charge carries a maximum penalty of 3 years in prison, which will never happen. I mean, come on. They're going to be like, Jussie Smollett, you owe the court $50, and that's going to be the end of it. No, probably not. I think he might get a heavy fine and probation, but we'll see. We got a lot to break down. We've got some great tweets to bring up from the president and the vice president about how they were supporting this man and how many were. So we'll get into all that stuff with Jussie Smollett. He's saying he will be filing an appeal, which is the most insane thing I've ever heard, considering how stupid his defense was. And we all expected this to happen, and then it did. We also got a bunch of other crazy news. The prime minister of Finland went out clubbing, wasn't answering her phone. We've got this one blew my mind. Joe Biden, the Biden administration, is effectively telling Ukraine to surrender their eastern front to Russian-backed separatists, to just give them autonomy in the region to some degree. And this is Biden basically saying, Putin, you've won. We waived the sanctions on the gas pipeline. We don't got anything else here. And this one's a little tough because, in my opinion, I agree with Tucker when he said, why do we care about Ukraine's border? He's right. So if this avoids war, why should I care about Ukraine? And if Joe Biden doesn't, But my concern is, like with Afghanistan, he's blundering our foreign policy worse than it should be. I mean, getting out of Afghanistan was the right thing to do, but not the way he did it. So we're going to get into all that. And joining us today is Jan Jekelic of the Epoch Times. Do you want to introduce yourself?
Well, really great to be on the show here. I'm a senior editor with Epoch Times. I host American Thought Leaders on Epoch TV on our streaming platform and on NTD now on cable, 23 million cable households. That's pretty awesome. I'm kind of shocked to be on there a bit. we've been bringing on some pretty interesting people, especially lately, a lot of people that are, you know, basically talking honestly about the scientists that are talking honestly about the realities of coronavirus and the policies and everything else. So.
Right on. Cool, man. Yeah. Well, glad to have you. We got Luke here as well.
Teraz mamy dwa Polaki na programie tutaj, to znaczy, że to jest nasz program pod naszą kontrolą i jak chcesz mnie supportować, możesz iść on the best political show.
Oh my gosh.
I możesz kupić takie koszulki, takie co ja teraz noszę, teraz co tutaj czyta. The Great Resist. They will own nobody and they will be unhappy.
Jan, tylko, can we get a translation?
Ty musisz tą koszulkę kupić na thebestpoliticalshirts.com, bo jak nie będziesz kupić, ja tutaj nie będę siedział. No to ci teraz prawdę mówię. Jan, bardzo dobrze tutaj
jest. Ale ile ty tutaj masz Polaków, którzy słuchają? Powiedz mi.
Nieważne, no? Nieważne. Tylko słyszą, niech słyszą tylko moją stronę thebestpoliticalshirts.com. To jest najważniejsze. I teraz będzie gadać.
No? I don't think you need a translation. Amazing. I think it's pretty clear what he wants to get across, right?
I'm getting it.
I teraz będzie Linda mówić.
I can translate this. He said, I need to make money. Buy my t-shirts, please.
To trochę prawdy tam masz, ale kurde, daj mi mówić.
Linda.
I teraz będzie Linda mówić. I brudny hippies będzie mówił. Proszę bardzo.
He's the hippie. He
said dirty hippie, actually. Oh, you filthy hippie.
That's a compliment.
I wanted to confirm that it is both Epoch Times and Epoch Times, depending on if you're American English, British English. You say Epoch because so they don't mix it up and think it's Epic, E-P-I-C.
That's right.
And it's E-P-O-C-H.
So I'm kind of the school. I'm trying to bring in everyone over to E-P-O-C-H, epoch, epoch, right? Because you can, it's phonetic. You can hear it.
Like it. Yeah. Well, I'm Ian Crossland. Happy to be here. IanCrossland.net. What up?
I'm also here getting my language lesson in Polish tonight. We only need Jack Posobiec here to complete the trifecta of Polish dudes, so that would be fun. Maybe next time.
He doesn't speak Polish, though.
He doesn't?
No, he speaks Mandarin.
No, but he speaks Mandarin. Yeah. It's pretty impressive, pretty good, actually. Yeah.
Don't forget, go to timcast.com, become a member. Look at this. We got a big old breaking story on the front page. Justice Smollett found guilty, written by Tim Pool. With there should be an additional byline credit for Chris Carr, who's our executive editor, who really filled it out. I just got it started. But when you are a member, you're helping support our team of journalists so we can break the news. We can report on a variety of issues. Not all of it is we're trying to avoid playing the stupid rage bait. And I'll tell you guys something. I'll be the first to admit it. We had an article up about this shopping Karen who accused a black man of stealing her cell phone. We had a couple comments saying, like, what is this, you know, race bait, rage bait garbage? And I saw it, and I talked to the team, and I was like, hey, guys, I think this is a little lowbrow. We should be sticking to good journalism, so we decided to take it down. Full disclosure, that is an editorial note. We are telling you right on the show, we strive to be the best of the best because we are beholden just to you guys as members. We're not trying to chase clicks. We're just trying to make sure when you're a member, you get access to good, well-researched and fact-checked information. But you're also going to get members-only segments from the TimCast IRL podcast. We will have that up for you around 11 p.m. tonight. So again, that's timcast.com. Some people have been asking about how to sign up to become a member, and they've been accidentally joining the YouTube membership, but it is at timcast.com. That's where we're going to go. Don't forget to like this video, subscribe to this channel, share this show with all your friends. Let's get into the big breaking news, my friends, ladies and gentlemen, from timcast.com. Jussie Smollett found guilty on first five counts of felony disorderly conduct, not guilty on count six. Former Empire actor has been found guilty. Deliberations lasted just over 9 hours, with the jury delivering the verdict Thursday evening around 6:15 p.m. Smollett was acquitted on count six of felony disorderly conduct, which refers to the defendant reporting to Detective Robert Graves on February 14, 2019, about 2 weeks after the incident, that he'd been the victim of an aggravated robbery. All other charges were related to the events that took place on January 29, 2019. As it stands, Judge James Lynn will have the discretion in imposing a concurrent or consecutive sentence for Smollett on each count at a later date. A disorderly conduct charge for false crime report is a class 4 felony, which means it is punishable by up to 3 years in prison and a $25,000 fine. Smollett took the stand and testified before the jury that he never lied to the police and denied orchestrating the attack on himself. However, it goes a little bit beyond just that. According to one report we covered the other day, the prosecutor, in the closing arguments, accused Smollett of perjury. Mm-hmm. Many different news outlets and columnists said, sure does look like Smollett just perjured himself. So he may try to get out of this one somehow. He's going to try and appeal, but he could get charged with perjury now. Now, as for prison time, I don't know what you guys, I don't think it'll happen. I think he's going to get a slap on the wrist. They're going to be like, we've got too many political allies. He's super wealthy. What, he'll pay a fine and then he's disgraced? Is that all we're going to get out of this? Or we cross our fingers, hope he goes to jail?
Well, I mean, was anyone concerned that, you know, I saw that, for example, BLM came out with a statement basically saying, you know, we support his position here, which I thought was fascinating because this is, you know, I still remember the police chief, you know, coming out and saying, you know, we spent 200 hours on this wild goose chase. This is you know, horrible. We can't do this, right? You never see police chiefs coming out and sort of, you know, basically saying this guy's guilty, et cetera, et cetera. You just don't see it. It was so open and shut. And what did the prosecution, what were they thinking putting together this, particular, the defense, I mean. What was the defense thinking putting together this defense?
Did you see their defense? Did you see what they tried to do?
Yeah.
Like, accuse the judge of lunging at you, then demand a mistrial over not being allowed to cross-examine properly, which was bunk,
and then
nearly crying and running out of the courtroom with your mother. That's quite literally what one of the defense lawyers for Smollett did.
Yeah. The BLM comment is big that you mentioned earlier because it was a BLM leader, Melina Abdullah, who said that Black Lives Matter stands in solidarity with Jussie Smollett because we could never believe the police. Now, I believe also Blair White had a very interesting comment about this. She said, poor Smollett, I hope he doesn't beat himself up over this, which I thought was very fitting. There's also a lot of jokes about the juice being squeezed. But, you know, this sends a message to a lot of people. If you try to divide this country, if you fake a hate crime, there's going to be some ramifications for it. What are those ramifications? Is he going to get probation? Is he going to have to pay a heavy fine? Is he going to go to jail? Well, we're only going to see, because I think that's up for the judge to decide, not the prosecutor, right?
Yeah, well, I don't know if it's the judge. I believe the judge will issue sentencing. It's not going to be the prosecutor.
Yeah.
But whether he goes to jail will be interesting. So he's got five felony counts. I believe they're five felony counts, each with 3 years. And the judge could be like, that's 15 years, buddy. I really doubt that. Some people are saying it might be a year. I mean, it's a felony. So they might be like, look, so typically when you're convicted of a misdemeanor, they have a jail sentence, not a prison sentence, of up to 1 year. So I don't know how it works outside of Illinois, but I can say in Illinois, my understanding, it's been a long time since I was studying this stuff, is that if you commit a misdemeanor, they can at most put you in jail for 364 days. That would be like Cook County Jail, not a prison, not a state penitentiary. But once you cross that threshold into a year, they move you to one of the, like, you know, maximum security prisons or state prisons, and that's where things are really bad, like really bad. So, Smollett, I think if he's going to go to jail, it's going to be a year, isn't it?
Yeah, but it won't be like a maximum security thing, I'm sure, right? Even though it's technically a felony. I don't know anything.
I don't know. This is a violent... I mean, how would you classify this? I mean, it's a class 4 felony, so it's the weakest of felonies.
Right.
And he didn't, like, beat an old lady or anything like that.
Right.
But it's not a white-collar crime. True. It's not like they're going to put him in a golf resort.
Well, the crime to me is, you know...
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
The police are needed in Chicago. You know, the police are needed in this city. You know, and this is like, I think they said 200 hours that were used to basically, you know, follow a wild goose chase that was not that is a terrible, terrible thing for a city with that level of crime.
I would argue that they're doing a very poor job because of the high level of crime, because of how the government has been implementing policy there. I mean, the district attorney in Chicago is Kim Fox. She went out of her way to make sure that Jussie Smollett wasn't facing any charges at all. She was clearly a huge conflict of interest, since she was friends with him, friends with the Obamas, friends with a lot of highly connected people. So I bet on appeal there's going to be a lot of finagling. I think there's going to be more to this case that are going to surprise the rest of America. Because if you remember, this was a heinous case that motivated the establishment to scream out and point out against Trump supporters and say, these are really horrible people. This is the example that we need to stand on. We need to make sure that this never happens again. And then poof, we all found out that it was all a hoax, made up.
I want to pull up, we did briefly pull up the Black Lives Matter statement. Yeah. We have it here from their website, December 7th, statement regarding the ongoing trial of Jussie Smollett. They say, I'm not going to read the whole thing, but in our commitment to abolition, we can never believe police, especially the Chicago Police Department, over Jussie Smollett, a black man who has been courageously present, visible, and vocal in the struggle for black freedom. While policing at large is an irredeemable institution, CPD is notorious for its long and deep history of corruption, racism, and brutality. Now, I'll tell you, here's the challenge I face, but I think the decision is still simple. Being from Chicago, which people like to point out in the chat, I say a lot, but I don't really think I say it that often. But I'm from there, and I've dealt with bad cops. I've had cops screw with me. And as much as I have issues with, like, the black site they were operating, that's where they were secretly taking people and detaining them, they've done to activists. I have seen, there was one viral moment in Chicago where a meter maid gave a cop a ticket. So he, like, grabbed her by the neck and slammed her and lifted her up against the wall. There was another video where a bunch of off-duty cops beat the crap out of a bartender. So I've seen the bad cops in Chicago. And with all that I've experienced, when I saw this story, I said, the cops are telling the truth.
Right.
Like, Jussie Smollett's story is so stupid.
And dangerous. It's really dangerous.
It was a smear against half the country and the president. And it rallied a bunch of people into believing this crackpot BS about Trump. That bothers me. If we're going to have a conversation about what's true, we need to sit down. I've sat down at many, many dinner tables with Trump supporters, and we've had great conversations on racism in this country. And you'd be surprised how many of them are like, yeah, I understand that. But these people want to tell you, I mean, actually, maybe none of us here would be surprised. They'd be like, oh, yeah, we get it. But these people want you to believe they're all demon, white supremacist, evil, MAGA country lurking around. Black Lives Matter, this statement is so insane. Come on. Like, I'm surprised they were willing to do something so dumb. And that is with respect to understanding the problems in the Chicago Police Department.
I don't know yet how you can possibly say something like you can never believe a given set of people and expect people to take you seriously. That's clearly so purely ideologically motivated. Why would anyone take anything you have to say with any degree of seriousness?
Yes.
It's just broad brushing an entire group.
It was same with believe all women. I thought that's so ridiculous because some women lie, and when they do, you don't want to believe them. And sometimes you do want to believe the police because they tell you the truth. So all this hyperbole and extremity is like devastating.
I'll say this. Like, you know, I mentioned this half jokingly. I'm like, what if it turns out, you know, Smuts telling the truth?
Yeah.
Well, now he's been convicted by a jury of his peers, so he's guilty. He did it.
Right.
Well, you know, we'll see what happens with appeal, perhaps. People can be evicted. But I think his story outright was just the stupidest thing anyone had ever heard. Laughably bad. But maybe, you know, during the trial, I'm like, maybe there's a chance that the Osundaira brothers actually are sophisticated criminals who set him all up. That's why I kept saying innocent until proven guilty.
And
although I think we reasonably believe he's guilty.
And secret homophobes and white supremacists at the same time. So
pale skinned. Wearing MAGA hats.
Yeah, light skinned. But again, we also have to remember charges were initially dropped against Smollett. On March 8th, there was a grand jury indictment. Charges were dropped 2 weeks later, and then there was an outrage because of that. And that's when the Chicago police chief decided to make statements against this, and that's why they called it a, quote, whitewash of justice, interesting words chosen there for this particular incident. But Kim Fox this whole time was saying that the charges were excessive. She, of course, is heavily connected. She did recuse herself from originally charging Jussie Smollett. So obviously on the appeal, I would look out for more finagling, more political intervention during this case, because this was political from the very beginning. We saw Kamala Harris get involved in this. We saw Joe Biden get involved in this, and they were using this for their own political power.
Yep. This is a long trend. There's a book about hate crime hoaxes. Mm-hmm. There's a website tracking hate crime hoaxes. It's and Jussie Smollett was just capitalizing off of what we had already seen.
Mega dangerous. Like it is stupid what he did, but it's so dangerous. Not only did he waste cops' time, like you were saying earlier, what, 100 hours of either
200.
That's 200, either that's 200 man hours or 200 hours of like patrol groups of cops going out. I don't know. 200 man hours. Let's say that's at $40 an hour. You know, what is that? $80,000?
$40.
$20 an hour. Somewhere $50,000 to $80,000 they've wasted. Just an hourly wages is wasted. So he should pay all that back.
Now, they're suing him for it.
When it comes to punishment, throwing a guy in jail for 10 years, I don't know. But allowing a high-profile person to fake a hate crime is super dangerous. We cannot let people do that in society.
We do have an update here from the Associated Press as well. From just a few minutes before the show started, Smollett attorney says ex-Empire actor will appeal the verdict. Jussie Smollett's defense attorney said Thursday he will appeal the former Empire actor's conviction for lying to police about the being the victim of a racist anti-gay attack. A jury found Smollett guilty, this we now know. After the verdict was read, Ooch told reporters Smollett was disappointed and that he's 100% innocent. He said Smollett's team is confident he's going to be cleared of all accusations on all charges. At a certain point, I just have to say, give it up, man.
Dude, man, bro.
Apologize. if he had come out and said, look, I was just trying to bring attention to, you know, racism, and I thought people weren't listening, and it was stupid, I'd have still been like, screw this guy. You know what I mean? But a lot of people probably would have been like, all right, he fessed up, he admitted it. And my response typically is, okay, here's what I'll do. If you come out, admit it, and apologize, I will give you a second chance. You know why? If you don't, their only option is to go the other direction. So if Smollett does something bad and everyone hates him for it, and then he comes out and says, yo, I shouldn't have done that, it was a huge mistake, I'll say, all right, bro, I'm cool with that. I'm cool with that. Never do it again, and we're good, because I want you to keep walking towards the light and away from the darkness.
Yeah.
Mm. If you attack him for it and say, screw you, I'll never forgive you, he'll be like, darkness it is. We don't want any of that.
If I was working for Smollett and I was a part of his PR team, I would have been like, okay, we're bringing the Bloods and the Crips together. We're bringing the Trump supporters and BLM together. We're going to use this opportunity to see what we have in common with each other, and we're going to have a sit down, and we're going to work our differences out and actually show that we could be civilized, humane throughout all of this and not let political discourse ruin our humanity. That's what I would have been doing. But that would help too much people, I think.
Here's what concerns me, okay? And this is why, like, I was actually worried that it might be, you know, it might be a clean, innocent verdict, right? Because the people that are running Black Lives Matter organization, they subscribe to a very particular kind of ideology. I mean, John McWhorter, and, you know, he documents this, the Columbia professor in Woke Racism, his new book, that he sees it as a religion, right?
I agree.
And the idea is, correct, right, that their perspective on innocent is because of who he is, he's innocent. It doesn't actually matter what he did, right? And this is a really disturbing way to think about the world, right? When you really think about it, right? And then, of course, other people will be structurally innocent. Some people are structurally innocent. Some people are structurally guilty. And, you know, this is why, like, you asked earlier, you said, hey, well, this doesn't make any sense. But to people that are real believers, right, in the elect, as John McWhorter calls them, they think it works that way.
Kind of makes me think of Christianity and how, like, if you accept Christ into your heart, you go to heaven, and if you don't, you go to hell. I always never got that. It's like, so it doesn't either. I'm in the club or I'm not in the club. It doesn't matter what I do. That doesn't make any sense to me. So it sounds like Black Lives Matter has adopted that mentality.
Well, there's no forgiveness in their cult, as you brought up very eloquently. When you are wrong, when you are the person that's deemed someone as evil, someone who is institutionally hurting people, there's no coming back from it. Even if you apologize, you even get attacked by them even more.
And apologies are an admission of guilt. So this is the problem. I don't know if everybody agrees with me on forgiveness. But I think you have to have that forgiveness. There has to be the capability for someone to come back to the light. They don't. And that means we, on the side of forgiveness and understanding and logic and reason, are at a huge disadvantage. There's pros and cons, I suppose, but they're willing to burn it all down. Let me pull up these tweets we have from, Defiant L's.
Oh, yes.
We have Joe Biden on January 29th, 2019 at 8:31 p.m. I mean, this is basically like the day the news came out that he did this. Joe Biden, without looking into anything, says, what happened today to Jussie Smollett must never be tolerated in this country. We must stand up and demand that we no longer give this hate safe harbor, that homophobia and racism have no place on our streets and or in our hearts. We are with you, Jussie. And then they attach this one. New York Post, Jussie Smollett guilty of staging race-baiting hate attack to boost career. Yes. Then we get Kamala Harris. She said, Jussie Smollett is one of the kindest, most gentle human beings I know. I'm praying for his quick recovery. This was an attempted modern-day lynching. Ugh. No one should have to fear for their life because of their sexuality or color of their skin. We must confront this hate. And then Josh Kaplan, jury finds actor Smollett guilty on 5 counts. Yeah, we get it. Uh-huh. So I'll say this. I would be willing to forgive some people, but probably not Jussie Smollett. Why? Because he is a notorious cult leader among this non-theistic religion. That's probably not even fair to say. It's a cult. I would not be forgiving Kamala Harris or Joe Biden. Because at a certain point, it's like, look, if you do something bad and then you get caught and you fess up and say, I shouldn't have done that. It was wrong of me, but I thought it was a path to wealth and fame. And, you know, now that I got caught and it's threatening to me, I'm like, I'm going to try and stay away from that stuff. I'll be like, hey, look at that. That's honesty, right?
Yeah.
Kamala Harris, man, how often does she lie? How about when Kamala Harris tried keeping people in prison, denying them parole so she can use them as slave labor to fight wildfires? This is not a person I'm going to forgive because these people are evil. Joe Biden, too.
Her staff is also resigning in record numbers, saying that she's scolding them to the level where it's bringing on PTSD for many people within her office. People are just scared of her. And there was this one tweet from this one poor worker inside of the White House saying, hey, for the record, I work for Kamala and everything's great. And it looked almost like the exact version of that cartoon with fire all over him saying everything is fine. It was absolutely incredible. But, you know, these are the people that we're dealing with. People who are hard-headed, people who believe in themselves, people who, no matter what, will do anything for power. And that's exactly the game that they're in.
Let's be fair too. Are the people who are quitting Kamala Harris's, administration, or what you would call it, because she's mean, are they millennials?
I'm not sure.
I have
to see exactly the four staff members that left, because there's other complaints from inside. So it has to be a broad range. It can't just be young millennials.
I think that would be an important factor here, because I'm wondering how much of this is the coddling of the American mind.
Indeed, yes.
You know, you've got these young people who are like, Kamala came in and she was upset that I accidentally put the wrong cream in her coffee. And Kamala's like, oh, hey, I asked for a 2-cream. Could you get it fixed for me? And she went, oh, and like just freaked out. And you think I'm exaggerating too, but these people claim microaggressions are violence and stuff like that. So for all we know, Kamala is doing something like, excuse me, I told you to bring the packet upstairs. Could you please get it done? And they freak out and they're like, I can't work here.
So based on the fact that she literally kept people in prison for longer so they could fight fires.
When she knew they were innocent.
Exactly.
No, well, not mixing two stories. I'll make sure we're very careful.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
There were people who were about to be released on parole, and her office argued they should stay so they could be used as slave labor. There was another individual she knew was innocent, and they tried withholding the evidence to stop them from getting released. Mm. I believe I could be wrong about that last one.
There's another Fox News story that says Kamala Harris staffers leaving White House in part because they fear being labeled Harris person. Ooh. Report. This is other articles out there. But the ones that I saw was scaring people, scolding them, destroying their souls, which would make sense from a state prosecutor that has been absolutely ruthless throughout her entire career and literally knowingly put innocent people behind bars. So I think there's that.
You know, there's still an opportunity. You know, Tim, you talk about, you know, this opportunity for redemption, forgiveness. This is an incredibly important feature. And you're very right to say, by the way, that this is absent in the woke ideology, woke religion. But, perhaps both the president and the vice president can, you know, seeing this guilty verdict can say, hey, look, we were wrong.
They're not going to do that, though. I mean, come on. It's frustrating that something can happen with someone on the right and the people on the right will throw them out the window in 2 seconds. You know, like if you look at what happened with, the George Floyd incident, every single person in the country immediately jumps on board. And admittedly, so did I. I was like, that was wrong. We watched what happened.
Didn't look good.
And then later we start getting more and more details and we're like, okay, so it was kind of a bad situation, but it wasn't as cut and dry as we initially thought.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The left doesn't do that. I mean, we had that poll yesterday from Axios that young Democrats are substantially more intolerant than young Republicans. So this is a recurring trend that is setting freedom-loving individuals at a disadvantage. We're willing to forgive. We're willing to be tolerant. But the establishment liberal types, Democrat types, they're not. Jussie Smollett comes out. They jump up and they scream all to high heavens and demand. And what do conservatives do? Well, not all of them, but enough of them will be like, we should recognize this was bad. We'll see how it plays out. How do we function if they're willing to lie, cheat, and steal? And then I'll throw it to Waukesha. Hmm. When a car, an SUV, commits this atrocity.
Crazy.
Because it gained sentience.
Yeah.
And somehow decided to take these, you know, it was just like, that destroy all humans. You know, no, I'm kidding. But when we get a man with black nationalist sentiment on Facebook and support for Black Lives Matter, and he commits this atrocity, the media drops the story overnight. Yet, yeah. Rest assured, if there's a conservative or right-wing person, it will be nonstop press. Like, we had a guy go to the ICE facility. We had 100 days of violent rioting and firebombing of a federal building in Portland. And the media is like, the insurrection was January 6th. I don't know if it matters, to be completely honest, because I think people see through it.
I think you're right. No, actually, I think that's what I was thinking. I think that's the point. I think there's all these people. I mean, I keep talking to people. People keep writing. We get tons of mail at Epoch Times, for the show, for the whole paper and everything. And we have a ton of people that basically say, I feel politically homeless. I've heard mugged by reality. I've heard politically homeless. I've heard, you know, I don't recognize, you know, I am a Democrat, but what's happened, right? Like, I just don't get what some of the people, and then there's this large group of people that are just kind of afraid to say anything because they'll get attacked in the way that conservatives tend to get attacked, right? So it's interesting. Like, we kind of say, you know, Democrats or liberals, but I think it's not as big a group as we think, you know?
I used to, a few years ago, I actually cared. And I think there's a correlation between when CNN stopped reporting the news and me not caring what these people think anymore to a certain degree. So I remember I would have CNN on all the time. Mm. And they'd be reporting the news, and then they'd have their stupid anti-Trump stuff. But I was like, you know, whatever. And then one day I noticed they weren't reporting major news. It was like protests in Iran or something. And so I changed the channel. And then from that point on, more and more, you turn on CNN and it would be a panel about Trump. And I was like, there's no news here. And so it wasn't this conscious decision where I was like, CNN has lost the plot. It was kind of like, I'm looking for the news about this big event. I can't watch CNN. So at that point, I'm getting to the point where I'm like, people who watch this are detached from reality. But that brought me to a point where I was like, I need to inform people what's true and what's not true, because CNN is lying and MSNBC is lying. Now I'm at the point where I'm pretty sure nobody believes them. I mean, the people who do may be too far gone or lost or whatever. They're still worth talking to and trying to communicate with. Hey, share this video. Maybe you can help reach some of them. But it's funny. Like, when I'm on Twitter and I see some of the things these people tweet, and it's just laughably false stuff. Wrong, wrong, wrong. And at a certain point, I'm like, what do you even say to someone who believes the opposite of reality? They believe you believe the opposite of reality, but clearly we don't. I don't know.
And you're not even being hyperbolic. CNN has headlines that literally read, "Why inflation can actually be good for everyday Americans and bad for rich people." So when you have that level of kind of inversion of reality, of the truth, I mean, there used to be a point where I used to watch them, and I just recognized this is extremely bad for your mental health. But they used to be somewhat okay, especially when it came to breaking news, and it wasn't that overt. But it came to a point where it's disgusting. It's just like you take nasty food and you want to throw it up. My mind is wanting to throw up every time I put on CNN, because it's just so disingenuous, and it's so disrespectful for any intelligent person that's even paying a little bit of attention to what's going on to understand that what they're saying is absolutely delusional and crazy.
Well, you know, to your points, I remember in 2015, I had this moment. I've been watching China, basically, that was my focus for years, right? And I'm watching the American media. And there's, by the way, the media, you really state propaganda in China, right? It's all sent kind of centralized. The talking points are spread out. And it just functions a certain way. There's certain patterns. You watch it for a while, you see those patterns. In 2015, I think our media in America went crazy. That's what I saw. Like, I just...
Is it 2015?
2015. This was, like, basically post kind of Trump announcing his candidacy, yep, and this sort of all these narratives starting to build. And these changes, you actually put your finger on it, Tim, that these changes in how the programming worked, right? And I started watching, and I was like, wait a sec, this is working like the Chinese media. I'm not talking about CNN specifically. I'm talking about broadly, you know, across many media. And this was the part that was bizarre to me, because over there, there's the Xinhua, you know, propaganda agency basically controlling everything. Who's controlling everything here, right? But somehow everybody knew what the narratives were supposed to be. It was the weirdest thing. And that's where we suddenly, you know, at Epoch Times became weird and odd, because we were just doing something different, right? Which was just being truth seeking, right? So something really changed in 2015, I think.
It seemed like they wanted Hillary in so bad into the office, and then her email scandal appeared, and the media just kind of, this is like, okay, this is an opportunity to break one of the biggest stories of the 21st century. This is huge. Hillary Clinton, 10,000 plus emails of her working with Sidney Blumenthal to get us into Libya, like so much incriminating. And it was like silence, because And it was silence. And it was like a coordinated silence. I sensed it too. I just didn't realize, I didn't see the correlation between that and Chinese state propaganda. Mm-hmm. What do you think is like the Council on Foreign Relations is related to the coordinating? Like AT&T owns CNN. So like at what point are these corporations coming up to like a group of like six dudes getting together and being like, I'm going to have my media organizations run this story on Tuesday. And they're like, well, we'll do it on Wednesday.
Okay. Well, they had something called the Journo List. So it's Journo-List.
Clever.
And I was actually on some of these things. These were Facebook communities and email groups where all of the New York media would be in an email chain or like a forum. Someone would post news. They would all see it, and then everyone would write it. So this created this weird narrative collusion. I actually think people underestimate how much this turned media into rage bait garbage nonsense and pulled the media class outside of America. So when you have people who only get their news from each other, they're sitting in a room talking to each other. I'll tell you this. Look at Australia. Got a bunch of really weird critters over there, huh? Why? They have endemic species. Because of the separation of land masses, evolution took a different path there versus another place. That's an easiest way to, the easiest way to understand what happens to these news organizations. You take a bunch of these journalists, separate them from regular mainstream Americans and put them in a room, and they will evolve their perspective and narrative dramatically away from where regular Americans are. Now all of a sudden, you get moderates voting for Donald Trump, who are like, I think America should have factories here. I agree with Bernie Sanders on not having the borders wide open. And then all of a sudden they're like, that's far right. Bernie Sanders gets swept up in the same thing. It eventually starts spreading. It goes to social media, and then Twitter creates, they take this weird mutant worldview from these newsrooms, spread it out all over Twitter, and now it's starting to spread everywhere. So I've actually had this conversation with Peter Boghossian, one of the guys who did one of the people who did the Sokol Squared hoax, where they made those, they took Mein Kampf and then turned it into a feminist journal, and then it got submitted in, you know, whatever. And his argument was all of this stuff started in the colleges, and I disagree with that. I believe it started in media and social media. I certainly believe a lot of these ideas, wokeness, critical race theory, and all that stuff did start in colleges, but my argument is it was only when social media and these New York digital publishing firms, blogs, became prominent that these ideas skyrocketed in the LexisNexis database, appearing in the New York Times. And so when people say, yeah, but the ideas originate in universities, I say a lot of ideas are in universities, but this is the only one that expanded out of it. So when you can highlight a handful of academics with crazy ideas, well, there's probably 3,000 more academics with crazy ideas that are not cultural, you know, Marxism or whatever. But when you get these people at big tech firms, we're on these journalist forums who are using social media algorithms to pump out as many keywords as possible, you get this warped, broken cult. And it's expanding. And the crazy thing is, back in 2012, 2013, when we started seeing Gamergate start, so many people thought these were just creepy weirdos. Now, we did a member segment the other day about tulpas and mind alters, people who are they're suffering from some kind of social psychosis. So these are people who believe they have multiple people in their heads. And they make TikTok videos where they're like, one girl's like, I am a doll, I forget to breathe, and like these really weird behaviors. It's a social contagion that's emerging from this, and we're watching it happen in real time. That's not out of universities. That's from what the media is doing, and journalists are wrapped up in it all the same.
So what you're saying, the Chinese top-down, was it the, what'd you call the?
Xinhua.
Xinhua organization is coordinating the media, that you think that there's more of an emergent phenomenon as well, where like people are saying, hey, that worked on CNN, let's run it on Fox. Hey, that worked on MSNBC, let's run it. Although there might be a group of like top down oligarchs also doing it. We don't have any evidence for it.
That was my conclusion. Well, I think there's certain opinion leaders. Okay. Definitely. There was a time when, you know, basically the New York Times set the news agenda for the day and everyone just looked at it. And the New York Times, I mean, talk to anyone that worked in those newsrooms. They were aware of the fact that that was their job and that was their right, you know, to kind of do that, right? Of course, that the whole sort of explosion of blogs and everything took that away from them, or at least to some extent, right?
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Well, so I have talked about this quite a bit, but I'll just try to make it quick. When you share an article with, you know, Kamala Harris in the headline, people who are interested in Kamala Harris are fed that through the algorithm. If you have a headline that says Kamala Harris, Jussie Smollett, now you're getting both groups, Group X and Group Y, the Jussie Smollett fans and the Kamala fans, and it becomes exponential. So what happened was in the late 2000s, early 2010s, these blogs, Mike.com is a great example because they were pro-Ron Paul initially. Why? Well, the Ron Paul love revolution was very popular online. But what started working better was anti-police brutality, racism, and general wokeness. Mm. So this is back in 2010 or 11. Mm. They started shifting from a libertarian internet perspective into wokeness, because when you make a headline that says, like, trans women of color fighting for Black Lives Matter against police brutality are the strength against white supremacy or whatever, you have all of those keywords crammed in that headline. Facebook feeds it to way more people. All of a sudden now intersectionality started rising, and from that we end up now in a whole world where we have members of Congress who are in this cult who believe things that quite literally make no sense.
Yeah. I would argue those who control the algorithms control the minds of the people, and I think that's very evident with a lot of the agenda that has been achieved through manipulation of the perception of everyone's reality. And you could very easily shape that by showing them certain events and denying them other events, talking about certain set of facts, denying other certain amount of facts, having these echo chambers that constantly regurgitate the same amount of news to people so they double down, triple down on their political positions. But I wanted to ask you, Jan, specifically, there's a lot of people talking about what's happening now in reference to the Cultural Revolution in China. Mm-hmm. Do you think that's a fair, accurate depiction? And do you have any examples of how that might be related?
Oh, no, absolutely. And that's a fantastic question. I've had a number of people on the show, on American Thought Leaders, talking about this specifically. One woman named Shi Van Fleet. So she kind of became into prominence in Loudoun County. She was one of those parents that came up and spoke and said, I was actually part of the Cultural Revolution. I was there. Right. And so she, it's actually a really thoughtful interview, right? Because, you know, because people will say, well, there isn't, you know, mass killings or something like that. Well, that's true. Right. But the way that language was manipulated, right? The way that, the way the censorship works, there's a whole series of, I guess, the kind of cultural elements, right, that aren't, that don't have to do with the actual killing, compelling people to behave a particular way, everyone being afraid if I don't join this, at this sort of performance art, this performative behavior, right? You know, when I looked at those tweets earlier, whenever I see that stuff, I think, you know, these people are basically virtue signaling to their base, so to speak. Yes, I'm on board with you. That's really what it says. It's not really saying, I think this is true or something like that. And this is all very much exactly from the Cultural Revolution. This is what Shi Van Fleet talked about.
And, right? And what about the releasing of criminals? Was that something that occurred during the communist takeover?
No, so absolutely. So it's, you know, we have a series that it's actually very interesting. It's called the Nine Commentaries on the Communist Party, right? And this was written by our Chinese edition for Chinese. Millions of Chinese have read it. It's a true history of communism in China. One of the chapters that there's a better translation, but originally it was kind of translated in the first version I saw as we were editing it, unleashing the scum of society. Okay. Mm-hmm. And actually this is what people do in the communist system. They take the people who have, you know, or cluster B, psychopaths, all this kind of stuff, and you let them loose on society because those are you basically let them do their thing and create the chaos, yep. right? And sort of break the system so that you can recreate your utopia after it. It's just yep. part of the game.
And if you're a capitalist or a landowner or a business owner, they literally put you in the middle of the square, start shaving your head, embarrassing you, and try to emasculate you and dehumanize you in front of everyone. One of the scariest parallels when it comes to the Cultural Revolution that I see now is the centralization of power, the centralization of our economy, and the pure mismanagement of just the food industry and the trade industry. And I think there's a lot of parallels right now when it comes to the centralization of that here in the United States
and
that are
terrifying. And scientism, like this idea that there's the science, here's the perspective. Like, science is not one perspective. It never was, never will be, right? But that's how it's playing out here. That's crazy, right?
The trope in our media is typically that doing something for science was viewed as like a negative. You know, there'd be like a mad scientist and he'd be experimenting on someone. He'd be like, I must do this for science. And it was like a villainous response to why they must carry it out. It was showing you to be inhuman. Now you have people who come out and say the science when they really mean the establishment narrative. Because the science is never settled. It's the weirdest thing for them to say that. I mean, I'm sure, Galileo would.
Science is Dr. Fauci. Yeah, Tim, please have a correction for our tech overlords and please forgive us. Fauci is science.
I could not believe that interview, by the way. I was like.
He said it more than once.
Twice.
Yes. Yeah. He said he was the science twice. Yeah. He's not. He's a guy. And he gets things wrong a lot.
But it's just so much not any, my background, I'm an evolutionary biologist, but that's my background, right? Like this, you can't say that. That's just nothing to do with science ever, right?
Well, let's talk about where wokeness brings us, and evolutionary biology I think will be interesting for this next conversation. We have a story from Daily Mail. Trans UPenn swimmer Leah Thomas complains about loss of muscle and strength due to hormone treatment. And says she's nowhere close to her previous best, says competing on women's team is fair. Now, I want to say this outright because I think it's important. And I think it's something you'll typically hear from many of the, post-liberal, disaffected liberals or whatever, and even many conservatives, although not all of them. I think people should be able to be happy and free and not disparaged for, whatever individual life choices they want to make, so long as they're not harming others. This is the instance where the transgender sport issue actually does start causing, a degree of harm to others. So if those aren't familiar, this is about a person who's biologically male who is transitioning to be a trans woman named Leah Thomas, who just broke a record in, a swimming competition and defeated the next runner-up by over 38 seconds, which for people who understand swimming, if you've ever watched like Michael Phelps in the Olympics, that is not just winning. That is like just totally outclassing and just absolutely demolishing everyone else. Now, there's a lot of people are bringing this up. In an interview with OutKick, a sports website, an unnamed athlete from, I believe this is UPenn, noted that while Thomas is already breaking school and meet records, she soon may be shattering world records. There's a few things I can say here just to get started. If the left, if their ideology wins, then I think the simple argument is we as humans have created these rules for these sporting events. And if we decide to change them, then they change. But that ultimately means there will be no women's sports. Or I should say there will be no sports exclusive to females, to use, their language. Or that's it. That's literally the outcome if we head in that direction. Otherwise, we have to say outright there will be male and female distinct divisions. But you mentioned you're an evolutionary biologist, so I suppose we can...
Well, that's my background. I haven't done it for 20 years,
You've got some context to add into this conversation, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, okay, I mean, I don't know what else I can say. I mean, there are very, very clear... I mean, this is just the biologist's perspective, I think, right? There's just very clear biological differences between men and women that you can't get rid of using hormone therapy or frankly surgery or anything. They're foundational differences. And I mean, and this, I say this with the greatest respect for people who are men that want to be women and, I leave them to doing that.
Be free. But this also means we have to reconcile other people's rights as well.
Absolutely. And I mean, like this sort of thing, right? Just on the face of it, is it unsayable that they won because they're physically male, right?
Someone pulled up the...
Is that okay to say? So yes, that's an interesting question.
You're canceled. How dare you have
it's
that
an assumption? No, but I mean, all of these... What other explanation is there? Or are we supposed to believe that somehow this isn't a factor? I mean...
What they'll end up saying is, no, not because they're male. Their genitals had nothing to do with this. It has to do with just being taller and having longer arms.
Which is because...
Which is a tendency towards, right, you know, being male. So the way I framed it on Twitter is just, look, if the argument is that from the left that trans women are women, then and they say like literally like indistinguishable. Well, then it's quite simple. This transgender swimmer has proven women can swim as fast as men.
True.
And that would mean that all the other women who lost by over 38 seconds are just not trying hard enough. Now, actually, I'll be reasonable on this one to a certain degree. I actually believe that there is a lack of competition in some women's sports because there is a lower level of direct competition. So I've actually seen this in skateboarding where there are certain female skaters I know who are insanely good at skating. And when I watch them compete, they compete like relaxed, like they're not going to push themselves too hard because they don't have to. And it keeps everything kind of down. So one of the responses I got to this was, well, this actually will drive biological females to push harder and actually break those records. You know, but my response to that is it going to matter if the record's already broken by a trans woman and then they'll never get anywhere near close to it? Somebody pulled up the time that this trans woman, the swimming times by like different races and found they were only off by a few seconds, even after a year of transition. In which case, yeah, it seems like they're still competing at the male level, which apparently they were really good at in the first place. I don't know. Is this a tired subject because we know it? It keeps happening.
No, it's insane. Completely unfair. There should be a trans division.
Yes.
If you have a kid that fails fourth grade 10 times, you don't have him compete with fourth graders when he's 18. Right. Come on.
And there's a number of, feminists that are calling this out because it's destroying
women's turf, they call them.
Yeah.
Right.
That was a really good point though, Ian.
It's a great point.
If there's somebody who's, you know, 13 and they're in eighth grade and they get held back 3 years and now they're 16, and I have seen this. I have seen people who have been held back 3 years, you know. Now, a 13-year-old to a 16-year-old is a big difference. And you're gonna make them play basketball against each other?
You shouldn't. I don't think so. I mean, it gets to a point where it's just, mechanically, the sport doesn't function if you imbalance it mechanically with artists or performers that are too strong or weak.
We were talking to, we had Jack Murphy on. We have him on every other Wednesday, but we had him here a while ago. And he was talking about how his kids, you know, they're athletes and they want to be at the highest level. And he was talking about, you know, his daughter or whatever. And I was just like, I mean, the future of the Olympics is going to be trans women. And I'm not saying that to be disrespectful to anybody. I mean, I think it's just an objective fact. This young woman from UPenn who spoke out said the aggravated teammate also claimed swimmers have discussed their frustrations with their coach, Mike Schnurr, but he, quote, just really likes winning.
I mean,
if you're somebody who wants to see your team winning, if you get compensation based on how well you do, they're going to be like, don't know, don't care, we're going to win.
So I suspect what's probably going to happen is we're going to have men's divisions and we're going to have subpar men's divisions. I suspect that will be the case because I feel like the men who aren't quite as good are going to want to go into trans women's divisions or into the women's division because it's going to be easier.
I don't think that.
You don't think that? Why not?
I do not believe there are going to be men who are like, I'll take chemicals and alter my entire life just so I can try and get a career in a sport. I do think there are going to be guys who are moderately good and eventually want to transition and then find themselves dominating the competition.
Hmm.
I think it's a leap. A lot of people have made that argument that men will chemically castrate themselves to win at basketball. I'm like, that's nuts. I don't believe that for a second. I do believe there are going to be males who are trans, who are good at sports, or at least, you know, moderately good or even leaning on the bad side, but still maybe ranking. And then when they transition, that'll put them at the higher bracket of the women's division. And I believe for a lot of reasons that would be unfair to biological females.
I could see a psycho that wanted to win so bad that they just devastate their body, transition it, join another league with this ripped male body into a female league.
I mean, South Park had an episode about that. Futurama. I was eating dinner the other day and there's a Futurama episode where Bender gets a robot sex change. So he competes in the robot Olympics as he's male in the women's division and then wins all of the gold medals. And then in order to pass gender testing gets, you know, a robot sex change or whatever. And the interesting thing is this show, I think, was made in the early 2000s. All of the characters said it's disgusting. They said it was gross and disgusting that he was doing it and how dare he. But I think they're referring to his cheating.
Right.
You know, but I think, you know, I'll agree with you guys to a certain extent that there may be really awful people who will exploit this. The bigger issue I see is that there have been transgender athletes who have not undergone any transition.
Right.
There's literally like a guy and one day he just comes to the coach and says, I'm trans. And then they say, okay, you're in the women's division now. So that's why they're trying to set standards for this. They're trying to quantify how it works, but it doesn't. It doesn't.
But what can the rules be? I mean, are the rules that you have is your testosterone level.
That's what they're doing.
I mean, that's fascinating in itself. How can you do that? This is a fundamental human rights question in my mind. I mean,
I think the end result is that there will be functionally no female sporting events.
Right.
What about if we have male, female, and then genderless? Think that'll work?
Yeah, someone pointed out on Twitter, they're like, what do you call it then when men and women are on the same team? I'm like, they're called mixed teams. Like, they actually bring this up. Apparently, there's like some commission or whatever that oversees the racing or whatever said that if the individual who's trans is competing but hasn't been a year on hormone therapy, then the team is classified as a mixed team. And so they'll race against a mixture of males and females. But this team is just competing against, you know, straight females. It's, you know what the craziest thing to me is? There is a transgender scientist who's also a marathon runner who actually did a study and a report about male testosterone, about a male muscular and bone density benefits well after transition, who said that, yeah, even a few years after transition, like the advantages persist. This is a trans athlete saying this. It's strange to me that there are individuals who don't recognize that it's unfair. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, it's just what you would, I mean, they did the study. That's fantastic. It's also kind of what you would expect. Like, you would have to really do the study to demonstrate that it's not the case, right? But that, it's fascinating. I mean,
I don't know. I guess this is just another part of, we have got two distinct worldviews in this country. And this one is the left and the right doesn't see it. But all that matters, I guess, where the kids go, where the next generation will be. And I don't know.
Why do we make women's sports to begin with? Was it so that women had a place where they could compete generally without having a guy like
Ian? Did you know
win all the games?
Did you know that there's most sporting leagues have no rule barring women at all? So women have tried out for the NFL, for instance, but the closest they ever get is to being a kicker. And there have been some women who are really, really good kickers, but they're just not as good as the male kickers.
Yeah, NCAA kickers, male football teams, you have a female kicker. I think that's happened in college.
Yeah, there was one woman and then they lost and apparently the team cried or something like that. I'm not trying to be mean. I think that's actually happened.
Yeah.
They decided they wanted to add the first female kicker and they did and she flubbed really bad. Yeah. I forgot what it was called. People tried saying it was a squib kick because she kicked so short. They were like, no, it was a strategy.
Oh.
But apparently the team came out afterwards and they were like, this was brutal to us. We've worked so hard and now we're losing for politics. So there's nothing barring women from being in male teams other than can they win? Like, can they, when they try out, do they succeed? So then we create a division just for females. But now we're having the argument over what does a woman mean? I mean, Wikipedia defines a woman as an adult human female, but activists are trying to change those definitions and alter what these sports are.
Did this girl score, Leah, the girl from UPenn?
Score?
Her time?
Her time was 38 seconds above.
Apparently, it would have ranked her second or third in the NCAA women's championships. Oh, just like,
huh?
What does that mean? Like across the country, that was the second and third highest?
That sounds like a national.
So yeah, some guy transitions to a female and then wins
the NCAA. It is a male who is transitioning to be a trans woman.
A trans woman is different than a female.
Yes.
Pardon my ignorance.
Yeah.
And then ranks at the top. That's like complete insanity. It's like, use some common sense. If the floor is muddy, you know, stop tracking mud on it and clean it up. This is a guy that transitioned to
actually here, look at this. The Daily Mail actually has it. They say, how Leah times stack up against her best as a male swimmer. In the 200 meter free, Will, before the transition, was 1 minute 39 seconds, and Leah was 1:41, and the NCAA is 1:39.10. In the 500 meter free, it was 4:18. For Leah, it was 4:34. So that's a bit down. And the NCAA is 4:24. And in the 1,650 meter free, Will got 14:54. Leah got 15:59. That's a whole minute. And the NCAA is 15 minutes. So not like this individual has instantly become the best, but certainly one of them. Yeah. I don't know. I think this has been circulating. This is an old story. Not this one particular, but the story that's happening around someone who is male. You know, we had Joe Rogan talk about this almost 10 years ago, I think it was, with Fallon Fox.
Right.
As far as I can tell, if that's the case, it's happening. It's done. This is the norm.
It's the combat. The combat sports is when it goes too far. If you have a man that transitions to a female or a woman, human, female, whatever it's called, I'm not sure, transitions, and then beats the hell out of a guy or a girl, breaks her face, like Fallon. I think they didn't even know she was, had transitioned.
No one had told them that, Fallon Fox was transgender.
That's, now if you want to do a non-combat sport and be like, hey, I hit the ball farther than you. I used to be a guy, but so what? That's dirty politics to me, but when you're hurting women, when women are getting their faces broken by people that used to be male and have a lot of testosterone and,
Final thought, you know, because I think it's crazy that we've talked about this story for so long and it just, here it is, it's normal now. My final thought, I guess, is like, shouldn't they just have an open division where anyone can choose to compete? But let's do this. Let's shift to foreign policy, a hard segue, because surprisingly, this story wasn't our lead. From the Daily Caller, Biden admin plans on advising Ukraine to hand over territory to Russia. This is an effective surrender of the conflict with Russia in Ukraine. And I couldn't believe it when I read this, because the AP's headline, I wonder if the Daily Caller has the link to the Associated Press article. The AP's headline did not, actually, I think we can pull it up. Let's see what they have the headline as. Biden assures Ukraine's leader of U.S. support to deter Russia. That's their headline. And everybody sees that and they're like, okay, sounds like we're good in Eastern Europe, right? Then you scroll down in the article and it says administration officials have suggested that the U.S. will press Ukraine to formally cede a measure of autonomy within its eastern Donbass region, which is now under de facto control by Russian-backed separatists who rose up against Kiev in 2014. So there is a group in eastern Ukraine that are backed by the Russians, armed by the Russians, that view themselves as completely separate, want to join Russia. And Biden's response to the buildup of troops by Russia is let them have it. That's crazy to me. Now, I want to stress this point. If this avoids U.S. or EU conflict in the region and a ground war, probably a good thing. But I suppose there's a line. I don't know where it is. I agree with Tucker. We shouldn't care about Ukraine's borders over our southern border, which is porous and busted. But I'm worried about another Afghanistan situation where Joe Biden, he's sitting there in the command seat, and then Vladimir Putin racks up 90,000 troops, and Biden goes, Ukraine, just give it to them. Just give them the territory. And it's like, here we go again. Could there be a better way? Look, under Trump, this stuff wasn't happening. And right. What did Trump do? He sold weapons to Ukraine and Putin backed off. Putin takes Crimea. Trump gets elected. Putin backs off. Biden gets in. Putin comes back and says, I take.
Yeah, I don't think Biden's calling the shots here. I think there's...
Think Putin's got compromat?
I think there's a long geopolitical neoconservative Pentagon establishment that does call the shots, and there's a lot of things happening behind the scenes. I wouldn't be surprised if there's a trade-off here, if there's a bigger deal here. You know, the United States did give Ukraine $2.5 billion of weaponry. They have been very active in the region. They have had success turning Ukraine, that had its sphere of influence with Russia, towards the European Union. So this is a very complex picture. It's going to be interesting to see how it unfolds from here. Obviously, I prefer diplomacy over hot war, and I think we should avoid hot war no matter what. I think the larger geopolitical picture...
What?
Well, you know what I mean. I think we don't need neoconservatives in charge threatening nuclear war. And we have that right now, a part of the U.S. government threatening the Russian government. I don't think that helps the situation at all. So I think diplomacy is key here. And I think all of America's foreign policy, especially the way it's been run under Trump and now Biden, is shooting itself in the foot and totally counterproductive, and also holds Europe in jeopardy, since, of course, Europe also depends on a lot of Russian oil and energy that's being shipped towards it right now. So there's a lot of at stake here. I still want to see the full picture before jumping the gun and understanding what's really happening here. About you?
I think this is your point is really, really well taken, because there's all these complex pieces. There's also the piece of, like, what are, you know, the Central European countries like Poland, you know, we have both Polish roots. What are they thinking as they're looking, you know, Poland wants to be this big, you know, basically ally to the U.S. and the U.S. is basically doing things like encouraging giving land to the Russians. That's like a huge red flag for the Poles. I mean, this is the Poles have been run. Basically, the Russians have invaded many times. The Germans have invaded many times. They're, you know, expecting the next time. Yeah. Right?
Well, let me ask you guys, though, is there any circumstance in which you think it would be good for U.S. troops to be on the ground in Ukraine?
That's a very hard decision to make here because of all the pieces here. I would prefer it doesn't happen. I would prefer diplomacy rule here.
I understand that you said that, but my question is, you said, you know, what did you say, at all costs or avoid war?
I think we should avoid war at all costs.
So what if the cost is like, you know, Russia overtly invades Ukraine to Kiev and Russian tanks are occupying the capital of Ukraine? Now, I think it's the obvious thing to point out. We are not Ukraine. How much of it is it our business to be like, here's a country that we're sort of friends with, but we're not even a part of the NATO alliance. Should we intervene?
Yeah, genocide. What if the Russians went in and started executing families, children on the street? Lots of media coverage of it. Are we supposed to go and police the world at this point? Is the time done for that? I'm tired of putting our people in harm's way.
I think there's ways of appeasing both sides and calming the situation down without reaching to those types of hyperbolic levels. Now, you made a good point. Poland and other European countries are very set against Russia. Poland even is building a military base called the Trump military base, very close to, of course, the Russian border. So obviously there's a lot of history there. There's a lot of turmoil. There's a lot of conflict. There's a lot of bloodshed. And it's just a horrible situation to deal with that we should avoid the bloodshed.
To me, I'm going to divert the question a little bit, because I don't fully know the answer, to be perfectly honest. But what I do know is that what I believe is that the Russians, basically Putin, they only really understand strength as a response. And if you don't use that as a important tool of your diplomacy, and they are incredibly aware of the fact that you will use whatever tool you have if they cross the red line, and it's a real red line, then they're going to abuse that massively. And I mean, so this, you know, this strategy, this is what they used in Crimea, right? They moved, basically it's this kind of like gray zone warfare, right? Where they move people in. It's not really Russian. There's kind of these people kind of take over with the support, and then suddenly, hey, this is Russia, right? And so how many times do you let that happen? How do you, you know, you need to support your allies, right?
Right. And that's it. I mean, they took Crimea. Russia took it. Everyone, you know, a lot of people believe, I think it's fair to say, the elections in Crimea were bunk. They came in and said, oh, everybody voted. It's fine. Now Crimea is annexed by Russia because Russia wants their warm water port. But there are hard questions about war, right? And the reason I ask about what Russia is doing and what Biden should do is, I agree, I don't want ground war. I think it may, if Biden is telling them, look, you're going to lose the Eastern Front because we want to avoid war, it's like maybe avoiding war is better. And if the people in the Eastern Front really do want to be, you know, part of Russia, and don't they have the autonomy to decide where who they should be governed by or what country they should be a part of? There's really tough questions. But the reason I ask about, you know, war is because right now China's got the Uyghur Muslim camps. And are we declaring war on China? Are we going to be like, it's time to storm the beaches of Macau to like make our way to the, you know, Xinjiang, you know, region or whatever?
Right now in the U.S. Congress, there were huge efforts being made to water down the provisions that would actually hold you know, China's activities in Xinjiang to account. You know, it's fascinating. So here's this is the question, right? So I was just speaking with the former head of human rights, democracy, and labor, okay, for the State Department under Trump, Robert Destro. So, you know, there's probably, you could say fairly, there's three genocides happening in China right now. There's the Uyghur one. The Uyghur tribunal just reinforced that reality basically today. And then there's the Tibetans. It's the same model that's been happening for a long time, and against the Falun Gong practitioners as well, you know, an attempt to eradicate, you know, an entire group, not necessarily by killing everybody. That's a later stage of genocide, but through all sorts of means, including these forced sterilizations, and so on and so forth. That's actually interesting. There's this kind of other flip side. They're trying to actually prevent people from getting sterilized in China, but that's a different topic.
Right.
Well, how do you deal? This is the worst thing. This is what we agree. The global community, the free world agrees. It's the absolute worst thing you can do. It's the worst thing, right? Try to eradicate entire groups of people. China's doing one for sure, probably three.
And they rag on Tucker Carlson for saying, why do we care about Ukraine? They accuse him of defending Putin. The Democrats act like Vladimir Putin is the most powerful evil on the planet. And Russia's like almost nothing to us at this point. Granted, they got a lot of nuclear weapons that I can get, but they've a much smaller population, and China's massive and way more powerful and way more dangerous and committing atrocities.
And way more intertwined financially. And that's the other very serious part of the puzzle, yeah. Right?
Well, China is threatening America's hegemony, and the geopolitical picture between Russia and the United States is complicating that and essentially allowing China to win because they have Russia, which is going to be aligning with them when they are naturally competitors. There's a lot of thing that divides Russia and China. And if geopolitically the United States played their cards differently, they could have another strategic ally in the region against their number one allying foe, the number one competitor, that most likely is going to create the Thucydides trap, which we talk about on the show a lot.
Thucydides.
When an emerging power threatens a current power, there's a high likelihood of war, of conflict. So I think on the geopolitical scale, that's a lot more important, especially with the picture of Taiwan, which the United States, you know, geopolitically is kind of ignoring almost outright. So to see this Russian perspective, there's a way that there should be negotiations. We shouldn't just give anything up. We should be tough. We should control our interests. But we have to also ask ourselves, what were the Russians and Chinese saying when the United States was invading Iraq? When the United States was invading Afghanistan? Were they saying, hey, if they attack this country, this sovereign country that had nothing to do with 9/11, like Iraq, are we going to defend them when they're doing a genocide on their people? And again, I'm not making those arguments, but those were the arguments and conversations that happened in their countries. And we have to understand that those arguments, if we're going to come to a table to try to understand this larger world picture, that's unfolding right now, that's extremely complicated.
That's a great point.
Yeah.
United
States took Iraq, China's going to take Taiwan, Russia takes Crimea.
So the whole idea of the Genocide Convention, right? Like, I'm not a fan of countries going out nation building, you know, taking over areas, U.S., any kind of, this is not good behavior. Genocide is one of these things. The reason the Genocide Convention exists is because there was a very serious genocide, the Holocaust, right? And people said, we can't allow this to happen. This is something that we actually, everybody needs to get involved in. Internationally, when we see this happening, we really need to act, right? That, because this is the worst thing humans do to each other, right?
Yeah. Yeah, there was we talked about it a bit. There was a post James Lindsay made about what separates a concentration camp from normal forms of imprisonment, and they said it's when someone is detained without due process, when they're taken from their home and put in a camp without due process.
Exactly
the,
right.
The escalation, on the other hand, is you know, it depends, right? So that's the idea about what happened in Germany was they were going and taking people and then sending to these camps, which is happening in a lot of different parts of the world, and it's not just China.
Also, a lot of people, you know, a lot of the bigger political establishment in Russia is saying, well, the United States got Libya. They got Syria. They're creating a domestic conflict in Yemen. They had their sphere of influence in Iraq, in Afghanistan. They're getting theirs. We should get ours. So that's the type of conversations that they're having. And I think, again, there's a lot of chess pieces on the table, but we have to reassess what we know, what we're told, because there's a totally different picture that we're not seeing that we should see.
Let's bring it all together. You know, we talked about the social issues in the United States, which led to, you know, a lot of questions about Black Lives Matter and wokeness and trans issues. And then we have what's going on with the geopolitical conflicts. We have this story from TimCast.com. Men prevented from getting vasectomies under China's new family planning policies. China is trying to stave off a population crisis caused by its declining fertility rates. With over 1.4 billion people, the decline could create a crisis as the population ages and is not replaced. The densely populated nation could run out of workers, which would cause severe economic consequences. This is fascinating. In the United States, we have no such effort. We have the opposite. They're telling people to not have kids. They're saying, if you want to save the environment, have no kids. I've been saying for a while, it really feels like there is an effort from global elites to convince Americans to burn down their own country. China will keep growing, and perhaps it's because they're scared of Thucydides' trap. That when a rising economic power reaches the level of the sitting economic power, war becomes extremely likely. It feels like there are powerful interests that are just saying, look, either the world implodes from a great conflict between two superpowers, or we let America down slowly and let them spiral out of control, and then China takes over.
Do you really want the model where that runs three genocides at the same time? And has a murder for organs industry that's state sanctioned.
Yeah,
you want that model across the world?
No, but I'll tell you this: the political establishment here in the U.S. does. The idea that they, with absolute authority, never have to worry about an election again; that they can just go in with an iron fist and a rubber stamp and wipe your house off the map to build a highway, they would love it.
That's a very disturbing thought, Tim.
And that's what they do in China.
That's exactly what they do in China. That's exactly what they can do, and they do do.
They do do. They will. And if we don't stand up and we don't speak out and we don't support what we believe in, the Democrats and the neocons, the neolibs and the neocons will do do here as well, and all over our Constitution. And it is funny, but it's true though. I mean, we've talked to several people who have, you know, they cover Chinese issues, you know, related to like foreign policy, and they talk about what the Chinese Communist Party does. And we're told that there was a period where, you know, democratic establishment politicians saw what they do in China, how they one day can walk up to a group of houses and say, destroy it all and throw those people in the gutter. And then we're going to build a government facility here, and they can do it like that.
Or the state, exactly what they did to build the stadiums for the 2008 Olympics. Mm-hmm.
They took the water away, right? Didn't they take the water from like farmers and peasants?
Every level of, you know, basically disenfranchisement, taking people's homes away without any due process, to use that term you used earlier. They raised a lot of history, actually, these Hutong areas and so forth.
This is also why Justin Trudeau says that he looked up to China's basic dictatorship, describing their kind of economic power and centralization, which allows them to control the markets whichever way they want. It doesn't surprise me that someone like Justin Trudeau made those statements.
I want to comment about this control, right? Why do they have this situation with the, you know, sort of preventing vasectomies now, right? China, one of China's most massive problems is this demographic gap that they created through these crazy control policies, the one child policy,
exactly.
Right? So this is a massive problem for them. They're not going to solve it by preventing people from getting vasectomies. They don't actually have no one. This is one thing that I've never heard any remotely credible solution to this. Other than perhaps, I mean, immigration might be the solution, but no one wants to go live in a dictatorship that does what it does.
Well, right? China doesn't allow immigration. Their borders are almost predominantly closed. They're very nationalistic, and they treat outsiders, according to many accounts, very wrong, to say the least.
One of the biggest detriments to the woke left is that if they are unsuccessful in their attempts to get their ideology in schools, they will eventually cease to exist. And the math is actually really simple. I've actually covered this. It's very interesting. There is a Pew Research poll showing that Generation Z is slightly more conservative than millennials, but still very progressive in the same way millennials are, just leaning a little bit
And a lot of people assumed this meant that Generation Z was like waking up. They were realizing, but it's not true. What we're actually seeing is the ramification of replacement levels from the early 2000s. So if you go back to the early 2000s, you'd see many studies show liberals were having something like 1.5 kids on average and conservatives were having 2.01, which meant conservatives are replacing themselves and liberals weren't. Fast forward 20 years, what do you get? You get 20-year-olds voting and they lean a little bit more right, not because they believe what conservatives believe, but just because there are more conservative Gen Z than there are liberal ones. That will persist. But as many people have pointed out, progressives and leftists don't have kids. They have yours. Mm. So if they cannot get their ideology in schools, then we're looking at 20, 40 years, two more cycles and two more generations, and the United States becomes overwhelmingly conservative.
So this is why they hate, first of all, the idea of school choice. But the other thing I was going to ask you, Jan, because you're somewhat the authority, is what on earth was China thinking? How can you not look at, for example, a one-child policy and a country where they kill millions upon millions of little girls before birth, after birth, doesn't matter to them, and think this will be fine in the long term? I don't understand their thinking.
Well, and, you know, that's just to highlight that point, there's this crazy situation in China where there's just all these males that can't find someone to be with.
Right. Yeah. Huge problem.
Yeah. Like it, you know, go ahead.
Do you think that's what they were going for? Because that was something I noticed a long time ago. I was like, if you have a bunch of disenfranchised, lonely, single young men, what are they going to want to do? Oh, right.
War.
Go to war. Exactly. And I was like, is this the strategy?
I think they simply imagine, and this is the problem with these, you know, command top control social sort of utopian vision control systems, right? You don't, there's all sorts of collateral damage that you can create. I don't think they thought it through. I'll be perfectly honest. Mm-hmm. I really don't think they thought it through at all. They just thought, hey, we want to limit the population size. This is great. Let's do it.
I disagree a little bit. I think, Lydia's onto something with war, because why would they tell these men who can't find lovers not to get vasectomies?
Right.
Because they don't know who's going to survive. And if random guys are going out saying, well, I can't find a mate, I'm going to get, you know, my balls chopped off anyway, then what happens when many people go to war and the ones who remain are unable to have children? Mm. So they're basically saying, no, everybody remain fertile. And then when 30% of you die in the conflict of the United States through Sidney's trap, then, all right, we'll figure out who then can have kids.
Well, there's a big population crisis in China. The Chinese government has also been caught building databases of women and their fertility ranking.
Wow.
And we have to understand that this one-child policy was cheered on by a lot of internationalists, by a lot of globalists, including the founder of CNN, Ted Turner, that openly said that this was a great plan, this is awesome, this is what the world should be implementing. The people who opened up China to the world, Henry Kissinger, David Rockefeller, the ones that took American jobs and sent them overseas for cheap slave labor, those are the individuals that also cheered on those policies because they were also big proponents of population control and eugenics. And we see similar epithets by the World Economic Forum. We see similar epithets said by individuals like, you know, I have to say it, Bill Gates and other individuals. But those policies, I wouldn't be surprised, were made as a part of a deal, according to my own kind of perspective and opinion, saying, hey, we're going to give you all these jobs. We're going to give you all these corporations coming to you, but you need to implement the policies that we want you to implement. Top-down control, spying on citizens, social credit score, and a system where, of course, we regulate and control the population in almost every aspect. To me, China is the globalist experiment, and now China's saying, hey, we need more people. We're dealing with a population crisis here, and we need to take action, and they are taking very strong actions for that.
When it comes to the fertility question, you know, it just occurred to me, there is this, you know, you're probably aware of this sort of dramatic drop in male fertility. Certainly in the U.S., they've done, you know, extensive studies, but it's abroad. They think it's unclear what the mechanism is. They think it's some basically chemicals in the system. Now, China is the most polluted country, right? They basically have very, very limited pollution controls. There's all sorts of, you know, basically human devastation as a result of that. I wonder if there isn't also a fertility crisis even worse than there is here in the U.S. and in the free world, so to speak.
You ever see the BuzzFeed video from the Try Guys?
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
So these were four guys. It was BuzzFeed, right?
Yeah, I think so.
And these four guys, young millennial men, decided to get their testosterone levels checked. And I don't think they did research into this because
when they went and did and then published the results, their testosterone was comparable to that of like 80-year-old men.
Okay.
So bad. It was bad. It was bad. So, I mean, these guys.
Within all, just all of them had this.
Four guys,
yeah.
And all their testosterone was so way bad. Below average. And they're what? They're in their 20s or something?
Yeah, I think so.
That's at their prime. Mm-hmm. And these guys' testosterone was comparable to like elderly men.
But this wasn't something of the fact that they were hanging out with each other or something like that. Or
I don't know. Oh, maybe. I'm just saying. Yeah. I think we're seeing something with the infantilization of the millennial generation and potentially Gen Z. You know, I've long thought about this. How you know, I read a lot about how dogs became domesticated and how they were wolves, and dogs are effectively permanent puppies. They retain the behaviors of puppies, the love, the desire, but they don't ever develop the alpha, independent, and controlling and dominant nature of the wolf. Mm. This was bred out of them by humans who didn't want that. The humans wanted to be in charge. So, long story short, when wolves started scavenging the refuse of human camps, the wolves that were more tolerant and had the right behaviors were tolerated by the humans. And the humans who were more tolerant of the wolves had a hunting partner with wolves and then proto dogs. But eventually this artificial selection breeds out, or I guess technically natural selection at this point, because it wasn't planned, bred out the aggressive wolf behaviors. And then what ends up happening is proto dogs were like permanent wolf puppies. And so I see something similar in where we're going now with humans. We are becoming childlike. Humans in their mid-20s have never had a job before. They're 35-year-old men hosting podcasts who have no kids and aren't married. Right? But it's true. You know, my dad, well, I think he was 27, he had two kids. And I think the average age of a woman to have a child even today is still 24, but we're seeing that pushing back. I think now among, like, you know, millennials, it's getting way lower. That average still comes from the older generation, that when they're asked, how old were you when you had your first kid? And they're like 24, so that factors in. It's probably 21.
But it's so, you know, it's a lot of this is really social conditioning. I mean, it isn't the thing that you should do to have lots of kids. I mean, it is in Hasidic communities, for example, like my brother-in-law, you know, he has five kids. His daughter married into a family of 13. This is just what you do in Orthodox Jewish communities, but you don't do it in, you know, mainstream American society. In fact, it's kind of odd to have a lot of kids, right?
This is why the future is conservative and religious. Because there's two big factors here. And this is, again, if the leftists fail in schools, their ideology will age out with them. Conservatives are substantially less likely to advocate or have abortions. And they're also substantially more likely to have children in the first place.
Another thing we should really consider here is that China is dealing with a population crisis and they're deciding to take executive centralized action on it. The United States and the West is also dealing with a population crisis and we're encouraging it and saying this is great. We need to save the environment. We need to stop making children. And we even have Elon Musk came out just a few days ago and said civilization is going to crumble if people don't have more children. And I believe his warnings are warranted. I think they're true.
I mean, how can this not be true, right? I mean, unless we're talking about some sort of weird meta transhuman future, which
we are.
I want to highlight the article Luke mentioned real quick. We have it from CNBC. Elon Musk says civilization is going to crumble if people don't have more children. The tech billionaire said low and rapidly declining birth rates are one of the biggest risks to civilization. I can sort of provide some evidence to Elon Musk's claim. There was a TED talk by a guy who tried to make his own toaster from scratch. How much does a toaster cost at Walmart? 20
bucks?
$10.
Yeah.
10.
Wow. Yeah.
$10.
Yeah. It's really cheap.
Really?
The other day. Yeah.
I just assumed inflation would have made it more expensive.
Yeah.
$10.
Yeah.
That means if you work at McDonald's, on average, depending on which city you work in, it's probably going to take about an hour, hour and a half to get a toaster. So this guy decided to make a toaster himself. It's impossible. He discovered it was not possible. Why? He could not synthesize plastics. He could make everything else. You could mine the ore, he could smelt it, he could make the wiring, he could make all of that stuff, the control mechanisms, to get the plastic for the outside of the toaster, he had to mine the plastic, which effectively proves it couldn't be done. And the reason I bring this up in regards to Elon Musk is it shows the level of specialization among humans has grown so intense that no single person can make a thing. There's I'm forgetting who wrote the book, so forgive me.
What's it called?
It's Julie Borowski, I think.
Oh yeah.
Was she? What did she write? No One Knows How to Make a Pizza. Was that hers?
I think that was her. Yeah.
I hope I'm getting the person right, because if someone else wrote it, they're gonna be mad at me.
Sorry.
But the point of the book was that cheese, pepperoni, tomato sauce, the bread. No one person can make all of these things, and for the most part. A pizza's not that hard to make. What Elon Musk is basically saying is, and this is just one part of it, with a declining birth rate, one day we're going to be like, hey, there's no food at the supermarket. Oh, well, no one's driving trucks anymore. Well, why not? Because there's no one to drive trucks anymore. Well, what are people doing? People are doing other jobs. Right now, the unemployment, the amount of people who aren't working is half let me phrase it better. There's twice as many job openings as people without work. The problem is the people without work don't have the specialty for those jobs. This is what Elon Musk is talking about. We need specialties and specialists to advance technology. And if we don't, it doesn't happen.
He's right, too. And Elon Musk is the one who says, if you want more things, you have to make things, which sounds very profound. But when you talk to people who truly believe that milk grows out of store shelves, you realize that we might have a problem with conceptualizing where things come from. They do.
They do. During the primary in 2019 with Andrew Yang, I had people tweeting at me. Like, I was like, if people aren't – I'm sorry. This was – I think it was last year. It was 2020. And I was like, if people aren't working to make milk, where will they get milk? And they're like, what do you mean, the store? And I was like, where do you think the milk comes from at the store? And they're like, what are you talking about? The store has milk. And I was like, wow.
Wow.
These people don't understand the concept of the supply chain. Now, I'm not saying everybody. I'm not saying any particular group of people. I'm saying there are people who really don't get it.
Well, we have been really, really lucky. Our society is super specialized and we don't have to like spend all day farming and doing all this other stuff, but it makes us very spoiled. Makes us very insular and we don't realize everything that goes into bringing us, for example, our pizza or our pencil or our milk on the store shelves, and it weakens us. And I think that that might even be a component to men becoming weaker as well and people not even being interested in having kids. Like, I wonder if it's like a hugely overarching societal problem of ease. That's just what I came up with.
Well, there's that aspect. There's diet. There's chemicals. Yeah. There's also the lowering of the IQ of children because of lead and other poisons in our environment. There's a lot of things that attribute to it. The indoctrination centers that people call schools. There's so many different things that contribute to the destruction of the future of the United States that it's almost as if it's being done deliberately to this point, especially financially, economically. If you look at what's happening here, we are headed towards an utter disaster. We are falling off the cliff very soon. I think we're already off the cliff, but we're still in the moment where we think it's fun. It's not. There's going
where we think it's fun.
Yeah.
We're flying.
The train went up for a little bit. And then I think we're moments away from realizing, holy crap, there's a lot of consequences for our deliberate actions that have put us on this trajectory towards a wall that's all the way down.
I'll just add one thing too. It's like we drove off the edge of the cliff.
Yeah.
We're flying through the air and we're like going, people are all cheering and screaming. And there's a few of us.
Jim Cramer's like, the economy's doing better than ever.
And there's, and there's a few people in the car going, guys, we're actually going to start falling down the cliff into that rocky crevasse. And then CNN, you got Oliver Darcy or whoever, he's in the car with us, and he goes, actually, falling into the cross is a good thing.
It's a good thing.
We can make the train fly. That's what I'm focusing on right now. So get on board.
Good luck, Ian.
Yeah, it's going to take some effort, but it's going to happen.
What do you think, John?
You made me think of modern monetary policy, you know? Like, yeah. we can spend our way out of it, right?
That works great for families, you know, and
I have to believe that they're like high level banker and financial dudes that are like working around the Federal Reserve, and they're printing all of this money. It's digital, so they're typing all this money, and then as soon as some of these bankers get the money, they immediately convert it into something else. They're like, send me the money, and then they're buying crypto, they're buying silver, they're buying gold, they're buying land, and they're buying it in other countries.
Yes,
because I tell you this, man. What if Bitcoin fell from like 60, it was at 68 and it fell to like 43. It's the holidays. So a lot of people expected this if you know what's going on with crypto. But even now, you know, I had people messaging me like, were you talking all this good stuff about crypto saying it was going to be all big? And I'm like, dude, I bought it at like a couple grand. You know, I'm like, of course it drops down, but I'm happy. You know, when everything started getting bad, you know, around last year, I started saying I didn't want to be holding on to US dollars. And so I decided not to. I decided to just, you know, try and invest in the company as much as I can, get the equipment the company needs as fast as possible. Prices have gone way up. We have a guitar because we're recording a bunch of new music. And we got Pete Parada, formerly of The Offspring, who's working with us. Big fan. Awesome. Super excited. And I've got a standard Mexican Telecaster. It's a guitar. And I bought that thing for like $450, brand new. And now I have another standard Mexican Tele, and it was twice the price. And it's only been, I think, like 4 or 5 years or whatever. The price has doubled. Jeez. I went to a guitar store, and the guy told me that if you order a guitar today, it's going to take you 18 months or whatever to get it. It's becoming harder and harder to get things. And people are not realizing it because it's a ripple effect. There was some leftist who tweeted, like, this is a luxury problem. I can't remember who it was. She was like, all the rich people are just complaining because their luxuries are more expensive. It's like, yo, milk is up. But, yeah, are you listening to the warnings? So we're at the industry, we're at an industry professional level. It's really difficult to get things like the internet. It's really difficult to get specialty equipment for it. It's ridiculously expensive because we're trying to get the best of the best to run a business. So we are seeing the problems. We're trying to get more space built at the studio. Instead, we have to get a different studio. We can't move the HVAC because the materials we need for it aren't being shipped in. They don't exist. Is a regular person complaining about whether they can get HVAC materials? No. But what happens next? It's a ripple effect. Mm. We got a bunch of articles popping up saying next year, sticker shock is going to cause an apocalypse for middle class workers. When they see the price jump, January 1st, I think it is, General Mills raising the price on all cereals by 20%. That means if you're like, I got a budget for cereal, box of cereal for my kids is $5. Now it's going to be $6. Your budget's all off. And that may be $1 right there, but it adds up across the board because it's going to affect, the grains are going to affect everything.
Of course. Same with gas.
I opened up a bag of chips last night and it was like a third of a bag of chips worth of chips. It was so sad.
Shrinkflation.
So much empty space in that bag. Oh, shrinkflation. It should be that way.
Go, people are posting photos of when they like, I bought a box of waffles, then came back and the box is tiny.
Yeah.
To be fair though, Americans eat way too much.
True.
Yeah.
When we were in Texas, we went to a diner and the plate they gave me was like a trough. I was like, I can't eat this. You know?
I love it. I have to bring it home every time. Every time I go out in any kind of restaurant, I'm like, give me it to go anyway. I'm going to take it home, eat it later. I hate wasting food.
Yeah.
And to your point, you know, this is one of the craziest things I'm trying to wrap my head around, you know, because a lot of these, the lockdown policies that we experienced, well, all over the world, but certainly here in America, right? That led to a lot of obesity. I mean, the numbers are actually astounding. I don't have them in front of me, but like, and that is actually the thing, aside from age and having some comorbidities, that actually makes you way more susceptible to COVID. That's nuts.
Yeah.
Is it like confirmed that it lives in fat cells? Is that like an official scientific narrative now that COVID lives in fat cells?
I just saw that I just saw that headline. I haven't read the article yet. I have to look at it. It looks, I mean, you read something like that and you're like, I think I'm going to take a really close look at this before I just accept it.
There was an article from last year where they said that they tested, ice cream tested positive for COVID in China and they had to recall this ice cream. It was in the ice cream. So I thought, okay, maybe it lives in animal fat. Mm-hmm. But I've never seen another article about it. Never saw it confirmed or denied. It just appeared in Newsweek and then it was gone.
I'd say that even if it doesn't live in fat cells, it's probable that obesity weakens the immune system enough in every way that it's enough.
But they're trying to figure out why. They're trying to figure out why.
I will just say sugar is the devil.
That's right.
And get it out of there.
Yep.
You don't need it anymore. It's bad.
You don't.
I'm doing keto right now too, man.
Oh, really?
I'm just
are you?
Yeah, I'm trying to lose a little bit. I just got hit with the sugar in here a little bit, but
there was nothing to it for me. I didn't care. I was skating, you know, every day, and then one day I just accidentally only ate, you know, high fat meat and cheese. I had like avocados for breakfast, and then I had heavy cream in my coffee, and then I was like, I just keep doing it, whatever. And then I ended up losing a bunch of weight, and I've just been feeling better and better.
See, I can't do the diets where you're like, oh, just do this much or to eat less, or like, this is really simple. No carbs. That's easy. I can do that, right?
Cut bread out. It's not no carbs.
Yeah. It's very, no, of course, because you'd be insane to
eat
vegetables.
If someone was a conspiracy theorist and if there were central controllers out there, you know, what would be better than having a disease out there that culls the population, especially the people who eat the most? And the most elderly that don't work, don't produce anything, and you have to give a pension to.
what better way to slim the fat, literally and figuratively, if you were a central controller, hypothetically, theoretically, if you were doing that?
It's very cold, yeah. Man.
Well, let's ask the audience over in the super chat.
Yes,
so if you haven't already, smash the like button, subscribe to the channel, share the show with your friends, and go to timcast.com. We're going to have a members-only segment coming up later tonight. It's posted at timcast.com around 11 or so p.m. You'll see it on the front page. So if you want to become a member, you got to go to timcast.com. I stress that because a few people have, you know, made the mistake of signing up for YouTube's membership program, which is very
not
different.
The same.
Yes. But let's read some super chats. All right, we got this one from Steven Nizek. He says, does this now mean that Jussie Smollett has been found guilty of hate crimes in the heart of MAGA country?
Oh.
I don't know if it's a hate crime because he just lied to the cops. So, you know. All right, Andrew.
But he did commit a hate crime against himself.
That's right.
Technically. Sorry, go ahead.
Hopefully he doesn't beat himself up about it. That's a joke. All right, Andrew, I'm going to pronounce this wrong. Is it Pig Chick? Pig Zick? He says, how is it that Tim collects all these random polls?
We're not random. I knew Tim for like 10 years.
Longer than that. It's actually been just about 10 years. Yeah. Crazy. Wow. All right. Let's see. Dermy Wormy says, if you guys want great coverage of the Maxwell trial, go no further than Good Logic on YouTube. An actual lawyer going to the courthouse, watching the trial and reporting everything. Wow, that's great.
We are in contact.
Are we?
We are. But
as soon as the trial's over, we should. Right,
right,
right.
Yeah, right, how right, deep right. Do you know?
Yeah, and I think for a lot of this stuff, we're talking with like Steve Bannon. We're going to do special interviews for the website just so that we can have more in-depth sit-down conversations that are very hyper-focused and specific, not like a podcast with multiple news subjects and off-the-cuff conversation. So it'll be great to have like a direct breaking down of like the Maxwell trial and Epstein and all that stuff. All right, Fidel LeBlanc says, watched that Yuri Bezmenov ideological subversion video again today, and if you just replace Soviets with CCP, it's 100% accurate today. Crazy. Wow. Mark VA71, Euphoric Break, says, I've been keto nearly 9 years. You're looking great, Tim. Keep it up. Thank you, good sir. We had, last time we had Ariel Scarsella on. She's a good friend. She's a YouTuber. She's like, wow, Tim, you're looking real different. You're looking good. And I was like, what does that mean? And she was like, I'm complimenting you. And I was like, no, I know, but like specifically, I've been doing keto. My first introduction with the keto stuff was back when it was a conspiracy theory. And all the media was saying it was dangerous and not to do it. I knew this guy who would drink a glass of heavy whipping cream for breakfast.
Ugh.
I can't do that.
Gross.
That's crazy. I definitely put heavy whipping cream in my coffee. That's about it. But this dude, he would pour a glass of it and drink it and be like, you know, high fat diet. And I'd
yeah, do your body starts to swell. It's cool.
He was ripped.
Oh, wow.
He was crazy ripped. Yeah, man. I was like, I don't know about all that. And then like he had bacon for lunch or something. Well,
good for him.
Deliopolis says, it's easy for us to laugh at Jussie now, but we shouldn't lose sight of the fact his ruse, if he pulled it off, could have easily gotten people killed.
Hmm.
Yeah, and it sowed so much hate and animosity and anger in this country. That dude is evil.
Well, and there's still people that believe it's true, and that's the thing that's crazy about these things, right? Like
that the callous nature of their of how they, it's crazy, man. They, are these people sociopaths?
Jussie is, yeah, I think so.
Jussie.
He strikes me as really, really dumb, like not smart. I look at him, he looks normal, and I've never talked to him or even listened to an interview with him, but after listening to this, I think like,
you know,
this guy's kind of probably dumb.
You know what it is? They need to, the problem is he's in disguise. By shaving off his mustache, because if he didn't, he would have been sitting in court twirling it, and the jury would have been like, oh, yeah, we can see it right now.
Yeah.
You know, but he's trying to hide that.
Gotten all six.
All right, Spork Witch says, not quite right, Luke. Fox recused herself, then had her office and her subordinates, which still report to her, handling everything. Yeah. It was only after it was taken away from her office entirely, as it should have been, that something was done. She didn't recuse herself. She technically did by saying I would say this. She literally didn't recuse herself. She just went, I'm recusing myself. And then everyone was like, but you literally did not formally recuse yourself because your office is still working on it. And she was like, shut up.
And she was putting pressure on the office and saying that the charges were there was too much charges.
Yep. All right. McSquared says that the Jussie wasn't worth the squeeze for this smoulier.
Yeah.
But once he's sentenced, his milkshake will bring all the boys to the yard. Keep up the great work, Tim and crew. You're an inspiration.
Actually painful.
Kenneth Bedwell says, Luke and Jan, will you inform Tim about N. Chamberlain, Austria, 412-1938, Czechoslovakia, 1938, and lead to Poland, and led to Poland being erased for 65 years? No appeasement.
Yeah. Well, so this is, I was thinking about this, but this is, you know, this is kind of a different topic. We jump to a different topic. I mean, in a nutshell, right, when people are annexing land, right, i.e. hit Nazi Germany, and nothing happens, that just, this is the thing, like these authoritarian leaders, all they know is force and strength. And if you don't respond with strength, they're going to take more. It's just, I don't know if it's human nature. I don't know what it is, but it's just, you know, history is rife with this reality.
They're talking about N. Chamberlain as Neville Chamberlain, the British prime minister during Nazi Germany's rise to power.
Peace in our time.
And Hitler wanted to annex, was it Czechoslovakia?
Well, Poland and the United Kingdom had an alliance and a defense pact. So if Poland was attacked, the United Kingdom said that they would come in and defend Poland, and they never did.
Hmm. Oh?
Yeah.
Yep, and then Neville was like, peace in our time, by appeasing Hitler, and then eventually Hitler was like, okay, now he sends a blitzkrieg, and then they start bombing London. They're like, what's happening? Why is he doing it?
Germany kept annexing land, and then they were like, we'll just give him this little bit of land, and then he'll stop, and he never stopped.
Well, history is also complex there as well, because there's a lot of it that goes even before that with World War One, right, and how Germany had its land taken away. So there's Europe is filled with so much history. I used to love traveling there, but now it's all fascist everywhere, almost everywhere. Poland is still standing strong somehow, a little bit. But all the other places, I just won't be able to visit in my lifetime again.
Can't go to Canada unless you get the vaccine.
Yeah, can't go to most places in Europe now.
Yeah. Sad.
All right, JT Fire says, Ian, according to the Bible, you cannot enter heaven unless you accept Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior. God wants all people to know all people. I think it's I think it's fair to say, and maybe I'm wrong, I think Seamus would be a good person to ask about this, that, like, if you're on your deathbed and you try to do the deathbed repentance, where you're like, please forgive me, pretty sure God's going to be like, I believe him. I think he's going to know what's true in your heart. And if you're just saying it out of desperation, it's not going to fly, right?
That always tricked me out. Like, if Hitler, right before he blew his brains out, was like, and by the way, I accept Jesus into my heart. What have I done? I've done so much wrong. I'm repentant. And he really truly was. Does that mean he's up there in heaven right now waiting, Hitler?
If he really was repentant and truly accepted
according
Jesus
to Catholicism,
and all that stuff,
yes, he's in heaven. Yes, right? That to me is nonsense. Like, a soul, someone that does what he did with that much vitriol is not going to have a calm, heavenly soul. It's going to be tortured, man.
There's a joke that I just read. It's an old one. Where a politician dies, and then he finds himself at the pearly gates, and St. Peter says, oh, yes, so you are a politician? Right, well, we have a new policy here that says you have to spend one day in hell, and then you get to decide where you want to go. And he's like, whoa, no, I don't want to do that. Why do I have to spend a day in hell? And it's like, it's just policy. And then, blink, he wakes up in this luxury suite with, you know, beautiful, like, you know, silk sheets, and everything's nice, and a handsome gentleman walks in, hands him a cigar, and says, welcome to hell. And he stands up and he looks out the window, and it's beautiful and sunny, and he's like, this is hell? And he goes, oh, they're lying about what this is all about. I'm here to help you, and they didn't like what I was doing and making everybody a good time, free of worship and all that stuff. And he's like, wow, really? And then he shows him around. All of his old friends are there, people he admires and looks up to are there, and they're like, hey man, good to see you. And he goes to a party, and they're eating all this good food, and he's like, this is incredible. And they were like, yeah, you can't believe everything you hear. Of course they're going to try and tell you it's bad here, but we're trying to do right by people. We just don't agree with what they want. And then he's like, wow. And then he sees all his friends, and he says goodbye to them. And then all of a sudden, you know, it's getting late. He goes back to his suite and lays down, goes to sleep, and then wakes up right before the pearly gates again. And then he was like, that was incredible. And St. Peter says, well, then, which do you choose? And he goes, I want to go to hell. And then he goes, okay, snaps his fingers. And then all of a sudden, he's in pitch darkness. He hears screaming and suffering and fire. And then he looks over and he's like, what's happening? And then a large, grizzled, nasty-looking figure in the same suit walks up. And he says, it's me, the devil. And he goes, but what happened to the greenery, the luxury? And he goes, that was campaign season. Good joke. That's how it goes, right?
It's very good.
It's true.
All right, Gerald Armstrong says, Tim, when are you getting Kyle on? He's doing the rounds with Crowder, Blaze, etc. You know, first of all, like, I think Crowder's the same thing. Like, immediately after the trial, we were like, we're not going to try and, like, reach out and be like, we have to have Kyle Rittenhouse. You know what I'm interested in is actually I'd rather wait a little bit. I know he was on, you know, with Elijah and Sydney, and they said a lot of things, and he was on with Crowder, and he was on with Tucker. I'm not interested in trying to just try and book someone because they just had this big breaking news story. I'd like to book Kyle maybe in like 3 months when he's been watching the news. This story is a little bit behind him, and then hear his opinions on where things have gone and where things are. I think that would be more robust. And also, just to be completely honest, like trying to compete for one of the top personalities of like right now is just like, I just don't think, you know, I can do it. You know what I mean?
So he is just a young kid, which is why we like and appreciate him. And he did the right thing in an incredibly difficult situation and saved his own life. So, and then he survived the trial. So props to him. But at the same time, it's like, I would like for him to develop his own views on everything, hopefully become like a strong advocate for 2A stuff and everything, but we'll see what he wants to do.
I think right now it's like, there's a lot of convert questions to be had about what happened, and Tucker Carlson got that interview, broke that stuff down, and that was good.
Yeah.
Now I think I'd be interested to wait as we get into midterm season. And then have him come on and, you know, flesh out his thoughts and ideas on other subject areas. Otherwise, it just kind of feels like everyone's trying to get a piece of the Kyle Rittenhouse story.
Right.
Yeah, so I went through this with Occupy Wall Street after I got a bunch of attention. And then every news outlet was like, interview the guy. And I'm like, that's stupid. I didn't do anything. You know what I mean? Like, I get it. You got an interview. I'm going to go do my thing.
That's how I feel when people call me on my birthday. Call me the day before.
Yeah.
Right. Don't waste, or text
call me randomly in the year and say, what's up? How you been? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's cool. I'm glad he's going around talking to people. I just kind of feel like I don't really feel like I can add anything by just inviting him.
Yeah.
You know, but it would be cool in a few months talk about midterm stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Taka Nokage says, salvation is a gift from God. Man cannot save himself through good deeds. God requires that we agree with him, that we are only capable of wrongdoing. Belief that Jesus died in your place for your sins and that he resurrected is what saves you. Interesting.
So much hell has been brought on earth because of Christianity and religion. Like the Crusades, maybe that was, you can't pin it on Christianity, the Islam and the people, and it's probably more about the people than the religion, but just to say like, yeah, I believe it, now I synchronize with God, so I'm good, I can do as much chaos and destruction as I want. I don't vibe with that.
The thing is, that's not, so this is interesting, you know, reading John McWhorter's book, right? He's obviously very hostile towards religion. It's very interesting. And what struck me as I was reading was like, he kind of believes religion to be like the Spanish Inquisition or the Crusades version of religion, which of course was terrible, right? And I hope no one disputes this, right? But that's not the entirety of Christianity or frankly, you know, any one of these faiths that, you know, people seek redemption through or enlightenment through. It's just, you know, it's also, I suppose, the human reality of these religions, right? That where things can go when things go really bad.
I think a better way to look at religion, and people look at the Catholic Church and they're like, holy cow, this is full of terrible things that happen. And you cannot contest that. That is true. But it might be wiser to look at that and say something along the lines of, wow, people are really screwed up, and they'll use any kind of cover to get what they want, whether it's politics or argumentation or religion. They do. And the basic one of the basic tenets of Christianity is that people are incredibly deeply flawed and thereby need some form of salvation in the form of Jesus, obviously. So I don't know. Maybe we're kind of looking at it backward, looking at the bad things it's done. Maybe it's our misunderstanding of human nature.
We've got some super chats that I think are in Polish.
Oh boy.
I can't read it.
I'd love to.
Can you read that?
I can't read it. Can you make it bigger? You want me to walk up there?
Let me see if I can just do this. Mm-hmm. Is that going to work?
I think it's working.
Control plus.
Oh, wait. Kanady. I see something about, okay, wait. moje ludzie, pilnujcie się, miłość z Kanady.
Something about Canada.
Is that what it is?
What does that mean?
We can't help you. I'm sorry.
It's love from Canada.
Yeah.
Here are my people. Love from Canada. That middle part. I mean,
would mean like, you know, kind of like take care of yourself.
Something like that.
I think. Yeah.
We've had people post Polish stuff before, but I can't read it.
Nope.
So it looks like, I don't know what you're saying.
It's nice seeing you try though.
Yeah, that's funny.
I keep like, oh, I don't know. Keep going, Tim.
I read it with English phonetics. It's just way off. The funny thing is, when I was in Ukraine, there was a bunch of Cyrillic, and we were walking into this area with my friend, and there was a sign, a big banner, and I was like, so what does that say? And she was like, it's English. And I was like, that's not English. And she goes, yes, it is. It's just the Cyrillic alphabet. And I was like, really? And she's like, yeah, it's written in English. And then when she explained to me the sounds of the Cyrillic letters, I was like, wow, it said like International Business Festival or something. And it was literally English. It's crazy. Weird stuff. Backwards R.
Yeah.
Circle with line in it.
That's not right.
Damn right.
What's up, says Tim. You should watch how woke the Game Awards are. They're pushing propaganda, normalizing things, and making gaming culture woke trash. You should focus on this more. Millions of uninitiated watch it. We have pop culture crisis for that reason. To talk about video games and not to be super overt on politics, just to be like, why can't I play a video game? You know what I mean? But I will say something. I just watched The Order on Netflix. They canceled it, which is a bummer. It wasn't the best show in the world. But the villain in the second season is literally a communist. And I'm not saying figuratively. I mean, quite literally, they go to this guy's house and they find Stalin books and like Marx. And his idea is like the show is about a secret society with magic and they like they control it. And his idea is that everyone should be allowed to do magic. This other woman who works with him believes that there is a magic incantation which can free magic users of sacrifice, meaning everyone would have free magic and just be able to make whatever they want happen whenever they want. And the woman who leads the group, the Order, says, if it were possible, don't you think people would have done it by now? People have tried, but a world of free things just doesn't matter. Either you pay now or you pay later. And I was like, they're not talking about magic. They're talking about, you know, like capitalism and communism. The woman was overtly a communist, though. They called her, she calls her group's her group Praxis. Huh. I thought it was funny and I tweeted it and then the leftists were like, but I don't want politics in my TV shows. And I was like, yeah, I totally get that. That's why I think it's funny. Cause now you guys are, you know, angry because they're making fun of communists. Like, yeah, I'd rather just watch a show where a werewolf fights a vampire or something, I guess. I don't know. But I thought it was cool. They canceled it anyway. All right. Let's see where we are at. We got a bunch of super chats here. Let's see. People are talking about steroids and sperm counts. All right. Mark S. says, normally I don't like some of Ian's questions, but today's super is for Ian finally making sense. For your information, if you like Romance of the Three Kingdoms, check out The Warring States in Japan, 1550.
Yeah, is that like Oda Nobunaga and Tokugawa Shogunate rise to power? I think that happened during the Warring States period.
I saw this really, like really great documentary about, you know, the late 1800s in Japan. It was called The Last Samurai.
I think
Tom Cruise narrated
it's a good movie,
that,
but I'm kidding. I still like the movie.
It's a great film.
I actually did watch a really great documentary where it showed like the warring factions, the clans in Japan.
Yeah.
And that how, was like
bloody. That yeah, was a real, the Sengoku period. Sengoku Jidai. That's what it's.
Dupity says, I heard you were having Colin Moriarty at No Taxation on. Is this happening in January because of everything going on? We didn't announce that though, did we?
We did not announce that. That's kind of interesting. I wonder if he mentioned it. We are going to have him on sometime in the first quarter, according to him. So we'll make it happen. Yeah. No worries.
Yeah, we were, because we moved everything around with the Austin trip.
Yeah, had to reschedule.
Seriously, JK says, props to Ian for asking a great question and making a solid and cogent point. Mm-hmm. It's always refreshing and partially redeeming for himself to see that. Go, Ian. That's see you tomorrow,
the
though.
The second super chat that said, but I don't know what they're talking about.
He's already forgotten.
What the heck?
classic Ian.
Videosis says, Tim, search Brave's extension store for return YouTube dislike. Enjoy. I don't care about seeing the dislike button because I already know. Removing the dislike button stops people from when they see CNN from realizing everybody hates them. Mm. That's why they do it. And Joe Biden.
Yeah.
They put CNN on the front page and MSNBC and ABC, and they're always downvoted, thumbs down to oblivion.
And Lord Fauci as well.
And Lord Fauci. But now they got rid of it so you can't see it. So crusty and pathetic, mind you. Crusty. Did you guys see that Rumble threatened a legal action against Odyssey?
Yeah.
No. Yeah, but I didn't get the whole context. I don't know what Odyssey did.
So Odyssey tweeted that Rumble was misleading its investors and using bots, which that's a bold accusation, to be completely honest. You better have proof they're using bots. But they used analytics that showed that Rumble's average like watch time was a minute and a half or something, and Odyssey's was 7 minutes and a half, 7 minutes or whatever. Something like that, and the bounce rate was like, I don't know, some stats like that. And they were using it to say people aren't it doesn't add up that people aren't really watching the videos, and they said it was bots, and, you know, they're lying to investors to make money or whatever. And then Rumble sent them a letter saying, that's not true. Those are wrong stats. You're including embedded video players outside of the Rumble website, acting like it's the Rumble website. And then they said, sue me, go ahead. Like, I dare you, show the world who you really are. And I'm just kind of like, I don't know why Odyssey tweeted that.
Like, yeah, that seems kind of weird.
Like, we've complained about Rumble, but, like, only in, like, a philosophical context of where we think the future should go, and we've still complimented the fact that there's competition in the market.
No legal issues with what's going on with Rumble's on the up and up. But, like, to look at a bunch of evidence and then assume a conclusion is super dangerous.
To look at a bunch of evidence and assume a conclusion?
And assume a conclusion? Like, say, here's the evidence. They can't claim that there are botnets because of the evidence.
To have no evidence and assert a truth.
Well, to have
statistics
a list, have some
evidence of bots
and claim a truth is
still
dangerous.
It would be like looking at a blue flower and then claiming it rained yesterday. You're like, well, I mean, there's a flower and sometimes it rains, but doesn't prove anything. Just because Rumble's stats were low in whatever metric they use doesn't prove bots are being used at all. So to look at stats and say, aha, bots, you're like, that's not evidence of bots. It's evidence of people not watching for a long time.
Right. Yeah. To use that evidence of incongruencies and then
why are they
bots.
Fighting in the first place? I mean, what's the it feels like there's like a kind of a wide open space here, you know, at the moment.
I have concerns about a company like Rumble rallying everybody onto their platform and then going public and making tons of money. And I feel that there's a risk of exploitation that ultimately results in more censorship because now it's public and anyone can buy in. And of course, public investors would revolt and make demands and then you lose control, even if you have controlling shares. But, at the same time, I'm like, well, any competition's better than nothing. I just think it's good that they did what they did. Fine. We need to make our own thing. I wouldn't accuse them of doing anything like illicit or
it's
illegal.
It's super important that people don't pile business on Rumble right now. I've seen people in comments are like, "Yeah, down with Rumble, F Rumble." I'm like, no, man, come on,
Rumble's
like,
Rumble.
Yeah, but Rumble's legit.
Why would you do that? I mean, you know, it's pretty clear there are some, you know, very very questionable actors out there, and you might want to look at those first, right?
It's tough, man. When I complain about Rumble, it's basically because I fear that what they're doing is not the direction towards solving the problem of censorship. But at the same time, it's like a major net positive that Rumble Locals and all this stuff is happening because it competes with Silicon Valley. But it's different to come out and accuse them of malfeasance.
What is it with the censorship? Like, how does it not help?
Going public opens them up to these big institutional investors. So first of all, Rumble effectively merges with a company run by an institutional investment firm. Mm-hmm. Now you've got the institutional interests. They go public through the SPAC. Then, you know, as Ian pointed out, you get Vanguard, State Street, BlackRock. They buy in. Then as much as you think having controlling shares means they can't influence you, it's just not true. Mm. When they control enough, they can put pressure on you in ways you can't imagine.
Yeah.
And then eventually they're like, okay, well, it's like Steve Bannon said. He was like, someone's going to come to you and offer you $200 million. You're saying this to me. And then they're going to say, we're going to give you $200 million to expand this and make a big show by our own cable network. Our only suggestion is, you know, maybe get rid of Luke. He's a little too edgy for us. That's the game they play, right? Because, like, you know, Luke is as outspoken.
Edgelord,
whatever. And so I have the same view of what Rumble is doing. They get this big money from an institutional firm. How long until they say, look, of course we don't want to interfere. You know, I think it's great that you're this neutral network that's attracted so many people, but, you know, you've got this one guy who uses the platform and he's putting us at big risk. Look, you don't got to ban everybody. And it's not like we're saying change the rules. We're just saying maybe you shouldn't allow this one guy. And then they'll be like, well, you know, they did give us $400 million. So they start censoring people. Mm. What we're working on is decentralized technology so that you control it 100%. So you can't ban yourself unless you want to, I guess. You just delete your server. But then you have control of everything. So. But it's, you know, it is what it is. All right. Jacob Jones says, Ian, watch Real Crusades History here on YouTube to get the full Crusades context. And that's where you're screwing up is context and a pop culture understanding of Crusades history. Interesting.
Oh, well, thank you for the Real Crusades History.
All right. Let's see. Daniel Hansen says, you mention my mom sometimes when you talk about the cafe owner who was arrested across the Minnesota border in Iowa in court this week. And judge told her she can't argue the constitutionality of the executive orders to jury. This is tyranny. Wow, man.
Ooh, yikes.
We do. Yeah, because I don't think she did anything wrong by trying to survive in an economy where executive decree violates the Constitution. And you know what? I can't give you any legal advice, but I would just argue it. I'd quite literally bring it up. And then what's the judge going to say? I'll hold you in contempt. I'll be like, yo, man, you can either stick to the Constitution and allow me to explain the Constitution, or you can say the jury does not have the right to know the Constitution and you can lock me up for however long you think you need to. But I'll keep saying it. No matter how many times you have a trial, I will say the American Constitution. And then what? I don't know. You lock me up. Sure, I guess. But that's crazy, man. Sorry to hear. All right. Let's see what we got. Aaron Kohler says, I am from Waukesha. This Jussie Smollett type of mind crime has caused us real physical harm. Mm. That's true, man.
Yeah.
Alex Better says, you can go to Europe unvaxxed if you're a refugee. Mm. Quote unquote.
Indeed.
Yep. Flawedzilla says, where do you get your beanies? I think like Active Ride Shop or CCS. Skate shops? Skate beanies?
By the way, did you know we call those toques in Canada?
Yeah.
Right?
Terrible.
Yep. Beanie. Like, how is that a beanie? Anyway,
it's
okay.
It's like a bean. Yeah. Makes it like a bean. I don't know.
That's just a word for a hat.
Toque.
All right. Let's see. We'll grab a couple more here. Oh, this one's... I got to read this one. Septetrion says, chip companies selling air really grinds my gears.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
But you see, what happens is they have the bag. The machine sprays all the chips and it fills up to the top. And then in shipping, it shakes and they all start rustling down and compressing. Mm-hmm. That's just the way it works.
It's for cushioning, right?
No. It's just that when the chips are all laid on top of each other, there's a lot of excess space. When they seal it up and it bounces around in shipping, all of the chips start compressing and sinking to the bottom.
And especially when they break.
Yeah.
And that's terrible.
Yeah.
I thought it was for packing. I don't know.
All right. Home B says, here's $10 to support the chickens. Go buy raspberries. Yes. They are delicious this year.
All right.
Nice. And the chickens love it. They love eating the berries.
Yeah,
Sorts
of stuff. Yeah.
We got to get the Chicken City camera set up, but Ben was missing for a while, but we found him.
So we're all good. Right. Yes.
Yeah, we put up the vlog today because Ben was missing, but I guess they ended up figuring out where he went. He was gone for a few days and people were freaking out. There's like missing person reports pretty easily.
You know, he texted back like,
yeah, after 4 days, people are like,
he did vanish.
Our tech guy's gone missing. We have no idea where he is.
I mean.
But he's all right. So we're good. And now we'll get Chicken City set up. So, all right, everybody, go to timcast.com. That website is where there will be all of the members only content and segments. There's a huge library of it. You can click it, become a member, help support our work. We're hiring more journalists. The more you guys sign up, just more and more and more. And we're building a big facility. We're getting a quote on a new big corporate headquarters because we're building our own building. This is crazy. We're expanding like crazy. And we are going to hire a ton of people and it's going to be nuts. And then maybe in 10, 15 years, I shouldn't say maybe, in 10 years, we will be a massive international news organization and I will be like 80 years old equivalent because I'll just be worked to the bone too much. But again, support our work at TimCast.com. Smash that like button, subscribe to this channel, follow us at TimCast IRL, basically everywhere. You can follow me personally at TimCast. You want to shout anything out, Jan?
EpochTV.com. Check out the American Thought Leaders programs. Like I said, we cover all sorts of a range of, interesting guests. And I think it's a bit like the deep dive format that you mentioned that you do in the members only section. And also, I have a Holocaust documentary that I produced with my wife. My father-in-law is a Holocaust survivor and he's just this amazing man. So we actually produced something that's an optimistic Holocaust documentary. It's called Finding Manny, findingmanny.com. You could check it out there. Actually it's still in the film festival circuit. So we'll be putting up there where it'll be showing next. And, Twitter, of course, at Jan Jekielek, JanJekielek.
Yep. My family also had to deal with pretty much the same thing. But Jan, it was Zajebiście to have you on.
Zajebiście. That's a great word. That's what a great. That I haven't heard that in a while. Yeah. Oh man, that's just freaking A, or something.
It's one of my favorite terms. But as you can see, I have my own Matrix T-shirt on today, and I actually did a video on the fourth movie that's coming out soon on LukeUncensored.com. That was very interesting. I think you guys would like it a lot. And I have my own YouTube channel. It's We Are Change. So I hope to see some of you guys there. And thanks for having me.
I love that shirt, Luke. They great resist. Shirt.
That's a good shirt.
Man. Yeah, they will own nobody, and they will be unhappy.
Great.
Ooh, I like that. Yeah. Hey, thanks for coming, everyone. I'm Ian Crossland. Check me out on iancrossland.net and get in touch with my socials. Contact me through there, and I will see you all later.
Thank you guys all for tuning in as we talk with Jan and enjoy the company of our Polish gentlemen. You guys may follow me on Twitter at Sarah Patchlitz.
Thanks for hanging out, everybody. We will see all of you at timcast.com for the member segment. Again, thanks for hanging out.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.